Good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday. Goodness, what's today's date? I think it's the 14th. March 14, 2016. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern to midnight. If you're listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-562-3140. Our participant code is 385-698. If anyone would like to email a question, send questions to questions, plural, at nationallibertyalliance.org. That's questions, plural, at nationallibertyalliance.org. By the way, Gary, I think we do have some questions. Maybe you can take a look into the email and, you know, at some point you can ask me those questions. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support National Liberty Alliance's effort to save America. Also, please support National Liberty Alliance by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab up in the top right. Okay, we're going to start off, of course, with first a look in God's Word. We're going to look at Galatians chapter 5, and I think we're going to pick this up in, verse 13. We'll read 13 through 26. Brethren, ye have been called unto liberty. Only use not liberty for an occasion to the flesh, but by love serve one another. For all the law is fulfilled in one word, even in this, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. But if ye bite and devour one another, take heed that ye be not consumed one of another. This I say unto you, walk in the Spirit, and ye shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. For the flesh lusteth against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh. And these are contrary, the one to the other, so that ye cannot do the things that ye would. But if ye be led of the Spirit, ye are not under the law. Now the works of the flesh are manifest, which are these: adultery, fornication, uncleanliness, lasciviousness, idolatry, witchcraft, hatred, variance, emulations, wrath, strife, seditions, heresies, envyings, murders, drunkenness, revelings, and such like, of which I tell you before, as I have told you in times past, that they which do these such things shall not inherit the kingdom of God. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. Against such there is no law. And they that are Christ's have crucified the flesh with the afflictions and lust. Affections and lust. If you live in the Spirit, let us also walk in the Spirit. Let us not be desirous of vainglory, provoking one another, envying one another. Okay, that was Galatians chapter 5. I think it was verses 13 through 26. All right, we don't have too much to discuss tonight. We're going to go pretty quick over to our special guest speaker tonight, Brent Winters, the author of Excellence in Common Law. But before we do that, a couple of things. Gary, do we have any questions? Or Gerard, if you're here, do we have any questions that came into the email? I know we do. I've been so busy with running papers and data disks, I haven't really cut and paste anything out.
Yeah, the answer is yes, and I really didn't get my act together here.
Shame. All right, well, if you want to go take a look, I'll...
Well, no, I'm in it right now. What is the best answer to explain how the case number for NLA papers 1776-1789-2015 was created?
Okay. Yeah, I think everybody knows the meanings of the numbers. You need to mute yourself, though, Gary, because I'm bleeding through you. You were the culprit before, by the way.
I believe I was.
Oh, you were. Anyway, yeah, well, obviously the number 1776, everybody knows what that is. 1789, of course, is our Constitution. And 2015 was the year we started the paperwork. We started filing paperwork using that number, I believe, January, February, March, April, May of 2015. And we've been filing papers since. We've got 13 papers in 94 courts, and then we have quite a few additional papers, maybe six or eight or more, in Oregon, the federal district court out there. And of course, we have other papers going out all the time, going out to different people, sheriffs, which is pretty much these papers. And the sheriff's paper, by the way, just to bring everyone up to date, I'm anticipating to get them out Wednesday, maybe Thursday at the latest. So we're really working hard trying to get all these letters out. There's 3,100 and some odd letters going out. But anyway, when we went into the courts, we decided we're not going to pay them money. That's for the de jure court. We're not coming in under the de jure system, so we're going to refuse to pay them money, and we don't. We don't fill out all of those paperwork. We just file the papers, as the Supreme Court has said, and we agree with. The only thing necessary to file a case is a sworn affidavit. That makes your case prima facie. You need nothing else. You don't have to be able to write papers. You don't have to file a form. You just have to come in with a sworn affidavit. And the other thing is they have numbers, their own numbers. Since we didn't do their index number system, we didn't get one of their numbers, and we had to identify ourselves. And we had to choose our own numbers anyway because we're filing in all 94 courts, and we told them because of the corruption and the out-of-control RICO taking place amongst the judiciary and how they destroy the records and cleanse the records and just keep taking things out. That's why we filed in all 94 courts. And so, therefore, we had to have a unique number that we would be consistent across the nation. I mean, it would be insane for us to try to write a number or get a number for each one of these federal district courts. Of course, they would say we shouldn't do that, but we did it because we have to. Extraordinary circumstances and calls for extraordinary actions. And so, therefore, that's why we did that. So we wanted to pick a number that was a good number. So that's why we took that number. And, of course, 1215. Did we have 1215 in there? I don't think we did. We had 1776, 1789, and 2015, yeah. Which 2015, right. By the way, was the 800-year anniversary of the Magna Carta. And on June 15th, I think it was the actual date, if I recall, but June something, 2015, 800 years later, exactly, on that very day, Justice Anton Scalia wrote for the majority in a court case, which we do have a copy of the court case. I don't remember the name of it. But he wrote the decision for the majority in a court case, and he very specifically spoke about the Magna Carta. And, of course, and that was on the exact day of 800-year anniversary of the Magna Carta. We know he was on our side. We've seen his writings, and we had been sending our papers to him. As I mentioned before, we are working, getting the sheriff's papers out. I know someone had asked or send a couple of, I had this from a couple of people, why spend all the money on these papers? Why not just email? Everybody uses email. Well, we have fax machines, and everybody uses fax machines too. There's nothing more impressive than really sending paper, official looking. And in our case, it's 11 pages, and it also has a data disk in it. I was talking with a sheriff recently, and he was talking about one of the problems that most sheriffs have if they really don't understand or know the authority of the sheriff. And they always ask, well, where in the Constitution is that authority of the sheriff? Because they don't have anything to bite onto. We've answered those questions in a lot of our papers, and it's been spread out quite a bit. But that made me to realize that we need to do one paper, one page, and we're going to add it into this papers we're sending out to the sheriffs, just one page, which just gives the authority. You know, where did the sheriff come? What is the history? And again, we're not going to be able to get too deep in it, but we want to give sort of a chart, and we can give reference points and a little bit of information. But if they do read our papers, which we're encouraging and telling them that they should, and it's all on the data disk that we're sending them, they will discover quite a bit more about the power of the sheriff and the history of the sheriff. And the same thing if they took our constitutional course. They would learn quite a bit more about that. So they are interested in understanding. They're ignorant to the Constitution, obviously, just as we were. And, of course, we are changing that for ourselves, and we're encouraging our sheriffs to do the same. So this paper, I expect to really have a really, really big results from this because it's the first real formal paper we're sending to the sheriff. This is formal. There was a situation, I don't know where this was at, I didn't get the details, but there was a sheriff, and I think it was out west, and they got a call from a news station. They were asking questions about the Oregon case, so it might have been out in Oregon. And they wanted to know some details and different things. And the sheriff referred them to us, gave them our phone number. So you see, our word is getting out. And we have eight fax lines. They haven't been too busy lately, but we're going to be sparking that up again and starting to generate faxes again. But we've been faxing a lot of information to sheriffs, quite a bit. Matter of fact, everything we have ever written, we have sent a copy to the sheriff. Plus, we've written things specifically for the sheriff, so they've gotten that too. Okay, next week we may have something special to share. We'll see what's coming up. There's a lot of things happening in the background. We cannot talk about it, but it is big things. It could cause big changes, huge changes. One of the things I heard today, I got an email. I haven't confirmed this, but maybe someone else knows about this. But we heard that Donald Trump, somewhere along his campaign trail, so to speak, reamed out the BLM and in support of the ranchers. Now, I don't know the details or the specifics, and if anybody knows them, maybe they can get into the queue when we go to Q&A after our special guest finishes, and you can share that information with us. Okay. With that, we're going to go to Brent Gary or Jan, did anyone mark Brent so that we can find him?
He can unmute him. Oh, that's right.
No, he can't. We're in lecture.
Well, we didn't mark him.
What's his phone number?
Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to unmute everyone. I'm just going to go into, let's see.
His number was 300-something for area code, 310.
Okay, it's not going to be easy to find him because you got to go two pages. Hang on a minute. Yeah, I see him now. Brent, you've been unmuted. Try talking. Someone had unmuted him. 310. What happened?
Brent, 310-705-5063.
507-5063. You said
705. He's unmuted.
Well, it may not be him.
Okay. What's his number?
Okay, let me go into just basic mute. I'm going to shut the lecture off. Hang on a minute. Brent, hit star 6 and unmute yourself. All the hosts should mute themselves, please. Brent, hit star 6. And that should unmute you.
All right, I'm unmuted.
Okay, now your number is 317, right?
Correct.
Okay, so let me go back over. I'm going to go to Q&A, then I'm going to unmute you. Let's see. And I'm going to unmute you if I can find you. Goodness, I just lost him. I'll tell you what, go into the queue. Hit star 6 and go into the queue. And that'll get you unmuted also. Okay, 317, that's your number, right? No, that wasn't.
Brent, boy, John.
Oh, okay, there you go. You got it.
Yeah.
Okay, so we got Brett Winters, the author of Excellence in Common Law, and he's going to be speaking to us today for about 20 minutes, and then he'll be taking questions for about 20 minutes. And I believe the subject matter is going to be on, I think, due process. Was that what we were looking at?
Correct.
Okay, you got it. All the hosts, please mute.
All right. Thanks, John, and thanks for inviting me on, and thanks, Dan, for helping get me on. I like to talk about due process because it is the answer. It is the answer to the injustice that we see all around us. I heard again today from a fella who told me of a particular injustice in court. It was egregious. It was depressing, discouraging. But if you go to the Bible, you see that in the Old Testament anyway, and you see it carried over to the Newer Testament, but the prophets a lot talk about the injustices in the tribunals of the powers that be. And in every case, it's always the same. It's a violation of due process. The Supreme Court said this about due process. This was back about 1950 in a case called Soulsby. The Supreme Court said it is now the settled doctrine of this court that the due process clause, that is of the Constitution, the due process clause embodies a system of rights based on moral principles so deeply embedded in the traditions and feelings of our people as to be deemed fundamental to a civilized society as conceived by our whole history. Due process is that which comports with the deepest notions of what is fair and right and just. And that, friends, neighbors, and relatives, that quote is indicative of why we're in such a mess. And it is this. This quote from this Supreme Court case says absolutely nothing. You didn't notice. Let me read through it again and see if you think that you can get any clear definition of due process out of this. It is now settled doctrine of this court that the due process clause embodies a system of rights based on moral principles so deeply embedded in the traditions and feelings of our people as to be deemed fundamental to a civilized society as conceived by our whole history. Due process is that which comports with the deepest notions of what is fair and right and just. I sat on the platform probably 100 times with the fellow that was running for governor where I came from, because I was running for public office at that time, and so I got to hear him make 100 speeches. And he is the only man ever elected to governor in that particular state that won all of its 100, well, he fell one county short. He won more counties than any governor. There are 102 counties in the state. He won 101 of them. And the one he lost, he only lost by 3 votes. But I've listened to that man make speeches, and he had developed the art of making beautiful speeches that sounded great, and he said nothing. He said nothing. And the reason he said nothing was because he knew that if he said nothing, he could never really be criticized. But at the same time, if he could say things that made people feel good, that they would like him and vote him into office, and indeed they did. And that's what this statement here is. It says nothing. It sounds great. It has beautiful words. They explode in your head, words like conceived by our whole history, that which comports with the deepest notions of what is fair and right and just. Those words, fair and right and just, sound great, but you never hear anybody really describe what those are. And that is why we're in a mess. Due process, its violations are the fundamental reason, I'll repeat it again, that we're in the situation we're in our courts. Lack of due process. I'm going to quote myself. I like to say I'm quoting myself. If somebody else has said this, I have not found it. But it is a concept that a lot of people have stated, but I want to state it in what I think is a terse and memorable way, and I don't want you to forget it. Here goes. No man has the right to do wrong. No man has the right to do wrong. Now, I know that that phrase and the words I use bear repeating. The word right and the word wrong have been overused until they're hackneyed. Hackneyed, that means we use them as though we know what they mean, and we all assume we know what they mean, but again, truth is we don't, and the courts don't either. The judges are brought up in the same culture of lack of meaning of words, and someone much wiser and more famous than myself once said that when men lose the meanings of words, they lose their lives, their liberties, and their property. And by the way, all three of those are your property. Your life is your property, and your rights are your property, and your property is your rights, and your life and your liberty and property stand and fall together. Those are just three words saying the same, talking about the same thing, but different aspects of it, different faces of it, different ways to look at it. Well, the same thing is true with these words right and jurisdiction and due process, I think, is best encapsulated in the phrase, no man has the right to do wrong. Let me tell you what I mean when I say that, and this is the simplicity of it. There is a due process clause in our Constitution of the United States, and most state constitutions contain a similar clause guaranteeing due process. Due process is also expressed most memorably in history, Chapter 29 of Magna Carta. In its reissuance, it was moved to Chapter 39, but it said the same thing. It is the phrase law of the land. Now, there's another phrase that is thrown around like cordwood, never really thought about. Few people have a clue what it means. The court has defined that one, the Supreme Court has, and told us what it means. It means due process of law. The words due process don't appear in Magna Carta. The phrase law of the land appears. We've lifted that phrase from Magna Carta, where it was first memorably written. Before that, it wasn't written because people didn't write, and not much. And English wasn't even put to writing until about 900 AD. King Alfred and his Welsh scribe Asher devised a way to do that using Latin letters. But Magna Carta made it memorable. We have been developing it through writing ever since, but it had always existed. And all it ever said was, no man has a right to do wrong. If the Supreme Court of the United States were following due process, if all of our courts were following due process, they would say this. They would say, our federal courts, for example, would say, we have no jurisdiction over abortion. That's what the federal courts would say. The Supreme Court would say the same thing. We have no jurisdiction. Well, what is jurisdiction? Jurisdiction is the right to act. Here we are back to that word right. The right to act respecting a particular matter. The Supreme Court indeed has no jurisdiction over family matters, family law, reproductive rights, jurisdiction. And that's what due process is all about, jurisdiction. If someone violates that concept we call jurisdiction, usurps the jurisdiction of another, due process has been violated. Let's try another one, jurisdiction. Jurisdiction is expressed with reference to government with the doctrine we call separation of powers. Our Constitution never uses that phrase, separation of powers, but it is assumed and it is abundantly and blatantly clear that all, it says, legislative power shall be in the Congress of the United States, that is, in our national government. All judicial power, it says, shall be in the Supreme Court of the United States. And then it says that all executive power shall be in one president. Now, when the president legislates by promulgating regulations, he has violated the responsibilities, and that's what the word right means, an old Germanic Anglo word. It means responsibility. Still yet today in Germany, the word right, made popular during Hitler's reign of terror, but the word right means duty, responsibility. There are other words that are used to refer to law generally. But a right a right is a duty to act respecting a certain matter, is a duty. It is a duty to exercise discretion. That's what due process is. And when the president encroaches, usurps the power of Congress making legislation, he has violated due process. When the courts legislate from the bench, they have violated due process. When Congress passes an ex post facto law making something criminal after the fact of the people have done it and retrospectively made all of what has happened in the past a crime by legislative act, well, that is a violation of jurisdiction. It's stepping outside their role. That's a violation of due process. Let me give you another one. A judge that sits on a bench that decides to rule in a case. We just had a case I just read about. Somebody sent it to me. In Illinois, a judge was holding and having an affair with another judge. They were male and female in this case. And the husband of the other judge, who was the female, having the affair with the first judge, the husband of that woman, the lawful husband, was litigating cases in front of this other fellow who was having an affair with his wife, never told him about it. It came out later, and things got ugly after that. But the point I'm making is that judge didn't have jurisdiction to settle those cases in which the husband of the woman he was carrying on with was in front of him. He didn't have jurisdiction to do that, and that's what ultimately was said by the Supreme Court of the state. In other words, he violated due process. Due process is best encapsulated, in my humble opinion, from my point of view, in the phrase, no man has a right to do wrong, because the right to act respecting a certain matter is jurisdiction. State courts can violate their jurisdiction, encroach upon the jurisdiction of federal courts vice versa. The president, the governor, the executive powers can encroach upon the other branches of government, and that's what we see happening in spades, and all of that is a violation of due process. It's a violation of due process to have a biased judge. A judge who has an interest in the outcome of a case. Let's try this one. I just give examples because due process is best known in its examples. It eludes definition. There's no question, but I try to give it some. It was allowed in America for years for justices of the peace to pocket the fines that they exacted upon people. That went on for decades in America. Until not too many decades ago, the Supreme Court of the United States, a case finally found its way up, and the Supreme Court said, no, you can't do that. A judge who has a moneyed interest in a case can't rule in that case because a man cannot be a judge in his own case. That's claiming the right to do wrong. He can't do that. He's biased, obviously. He's not going to judge correctly. Well, that's a violation of due process for a man to be a judge in his own case. We had a case of a judge at home who had property rented out, and there was a fella that wouldn't pay him rent. He called him a deadbeat. He went out to the apartment that he had rented to this fella. He couldn't find him, and lo and behold, he found him in the apartment. The judge was carrying a pistol. He pulled out his pistol. He held him at gunpoint and held court on the spot, and delivered his judgment against him on the spot. And this fellow, of course, he took him to task for it and sued him. And the Seventh Appellate Circuit said that was okay, that he did that. In other words, it wasn't okay. No, they didn't say that. They said, you can't sue the judge for doing that. It was despicable, they said, and we don't want that to happen, and he can be censured, but you can't sue him because he never left his judicial role. He may have done it wrong. He may have had a gun in his hand. He may be liable for a crime for brandishing a weapon. We don't know about that, but he never left his judicial role. You can't sue him, but he might be liable in other ways. But in all of this, the point, the simple point, and we don't want to make this complicated. It isn't. No man has a right to do wrong. And that is the summation, mostly, of due process. Let me go to Magna Carta, check my time here. Yeah, I've got a little time. Let me go to Magna Carta. And this is where due process was first memorably made note of. Chapter 39. I said it backwards a while ago. I said it was chapter 29. It became 39. It was the other way around. But it says this, translated into English, of course, no free man shall be taken or imprisoned or deprived of his freehold, that's his land, or his liberties, or free customs, or outlawed, or exiled, that means banished, or in any other manner destroyed. Nor shall we, who's we, that's plural of majesty, the crown of England, nor shall we come upon him, nor shall we send another against him, except by a legal judgment of his peers, or by the law of the land. I want to point out quickly here, that's not a good translation. By the legal judgment of his peers, or by the law of the land, no. It admits of this translation, and this is much more probable according to the usages of the time, of Latin. Except by a legal judgment of his peers, and by the law of the land. Now you remember, maybe, I hope, the phrase law of the land was their way of saying due process of law. The words due process weren't used at all back then. And when our Constitution of the United States says that this Constitution shall be the supreme law of the land, what it's talking about is this. It's talking about jurisdiction. Law of the land is due process. Due process is jurisdiction. And the Constitution, our Constitution of the United States, is all about who has the right to act respecting any given matter. It is not about what is to be done. The stress is upon how it is to be done. Galatians, a while ago John read from Galatians chapter 5. I noticed two words. By love. By love. Well, what is the love of God? The Bible tells us, the Apostle John tells us point blank, a crisp, clear definition. He says, this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments. That we keep his commandments. That's the way you love people. You do what God tells you to do, respecting them, because you don't have jurisdiction to do anything else, but you have a jurisdiction, a right, the authority to do that. And you're supposed to do it, and if you don't do it, you're violating the how of how you deal with other people. Due process. Love is keeping the commandments. How are we to do it? Galatians, the letter to Galatians, tells us, by love. That's how. That's due process. And that's what due process is all about. Our common law, let me end with this, our common law is not a list of laws. Our common law is a way of life, W-A-Y. That is a word translated, could be translated in the Bible, Derek, in the Old Testament, road. It's a road, it's a path. And it's no mystery that the Northwest Ordinance of 1787 says that the people of that territory, that's one of our organic documents, by the way, says the people of that territory up there north and west of the Ohio River shall be entitled to trial by jury, watch this, according to the course. The course. That's the way. That's the road. That's the path that you have to stay on of the common law. And if the process, the course, I like that word course, even better than process, if the course is stayed right, is not violated, then our common law says the result is good. I talked today to a young lawyer, just got out of law school. He's doing a whole lot of things. He wanted to talk to me. I made time. I happened to be in his neck of the country, and I stopped to see him. We sat down and talked. I said that to him. I talked about due process. He wanted to ask me what I would suggest for him. What could he do that would help? And I said, well, due process is important. And I said, if the process isn't right, the result is wrong. I said, were you taught that in law school? He said, no, I never heard that. Well, I was taught it in law school, fortunately. I guess I had old professors. Some of them are gone now. There are a lot of things I wasn't taught that I should have been taught. But I was taught that. Where the process is right, where the due process is right, where the course that's followed is correct, the result is acceptable. Where due process is not followed, the result is not reliable. Let me end. I said I'd end a while ago. I've got to give you one more illustration from the Bible of due process. Matthew 18 is the pinnacle of the demonstration of this principle, and it has to do with government, and disagreements between brothers and how to handle it. And Jesus Christ is speaking the record of his words there, and he talks about a man having an offense. It's in a couple of different Gospels, but I'm talking about Matthew 18. But the point is, if there's a difference, a contention between two men, one is to go to the other and try to settle the matter alone. And if that doesn't work, he's to take a witness or two witnesses then. And if that doesn't work, then he's to go to the elders. And if that doesn't work, then he is to be let go and to be treated as a heathen. I like this phrase, as a heathen. That means an unbeliever. And it says a tax collector. Very vivid, lively words there. How do people treat tax collectors? Well, they avoid them at all costs. You don't try to offend them. You just stay away from them. And that's what Jesus Christ said to do. But if you'll notice there, he gives a process. And then he gets to the end of that description of process. And he says, after you do all that, if you've done all that, wherever two or three of you are together, whatsoever you have agreed upon there, and whatsoever the result was, whatsoever is bound on earth at that point, God will ratify the result. It shall be bound in heaven. Ratify, that means in hindsight, after it's over, if you follow this process, he'll justify the result, he'll ratify it. And you can have that assurance also. I had a fellow tell me recently he did that with his brother 20 years ago, his blood brother. Terrible falling out. He said he didn't know how to handle it. He went through that entire process. And they even agreed upon a set of elders to talk to. And they went and talked to them. And the elders gave their opinion, in favor of the one and not in favor of the other. Well, the one who didn't receive the favorable opinion grew angry, left, and he's only seen him once in the last 20 years. And I asked him, I said, would you do it over the same way? He said, yes, I'd do it the same way. He said, why? Because I know I did what God wanted me to do, and my pillow rests easy now, regardless of the result. There it is again. Due process. No man has a right to do wrong. You follow God's course, and all of the Bible is about how God wants us to deal with other men when we have differences with them. And he gives us specific instructions. That's just one example. There are many, many others. And our Constitution of the United States also talks about due process. And the rest of our law talks about due process. And due process is the one thing that can get you into federal court no matter what jurisdiction you're in, because if due process is violated, it is the most important part of our law. And remember I said, due process is equated to jurisdiction. No man has the right to do wrong, right? Yes, that means no man has the responsibility to do wrong. He has not the jurisdiction to do wrong. He has not the authority to do wrong. No man has a right, authority, or jurisdiction to do wrong, and violation of that principle is a violation of due process. Well, I've said a lot, and I'm going to quit before I start running circles. Sometimes I do that if I talk too much or step on my tongue. They've already done it, don't know. I'm sure you'll be able to tell me if that's true. But that's all I have for now, John, if that's enough.
Okay. Thank you, Brent. All right, we're going to open up for anybody has a question or a comment for Brent. Hit star 6 to get into the queue. Again, star 6 to get into the queue. Okay, when we go and take the question, we're going to lose Brent. So let's make sure someone gets their finger on Brent unmute him. Keep him unmuted. Gary, Jan, Gerard, someone keep an eye on him. 317. I don't want that phone number to fall down and we'll lose it in the pages here, but let's take the next caller. Okay. Someone just got unmuted, I think. No, let me try that again. Okay, DK USA. Now, we lost Brent, so if you can find Brent and unmute him. DK USA, PAD, I think it is, PA, Pennsylvania D. Okay, Brent, I guess you've been unmuted, 317 there. D from Pennsylvania, go right ahead, you've been unmuted. I think you have. Let me try again. Go right ahead. Can you hear us?
No. Hello?
Good. Yep, go right ahead.
Oh, okay. This is for Mr. Winters, of course. I was thinking because it looks like we're going to be successful in getting our courts back, that I'm studying Excellence of the Common Law, and there's this concept in there, and I guess it's a common law concept. It must be, and it's called, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, I think it's premunire or premunir or premunir, and it's about, I think it's about treason and sedition. And I was wondering if Mr. Winters could talk about that in relation to the second of the first principles of common law, the one that covers our officials saying they didn't know, they were just following orders, as the one that, you know, they used in the World War II trials. And it says basically that no man or no group of men, no matter how impressive or how many guns they have, you can't hide behind that. You can't seek refuge in them telling you, hey, it's okay for you to go around and violate other people's rights. I wanted to see if you could connect that with premunire. And then also, just as an aside for my own personal study, I'm trying to find, I thought I'd seen it before in Excellence of the Common Law, something about corruption of blood and having a nation's military being controlled by another nation or even by the United Nations. I was wondering if you could point out to me where that might be found. I'm trying to find it again in Excellence of the Common Law. So those are my two questions, and I appreciate it. And this is Georgia Eric, by the way.
Well, thanks. I'll start with this word, premunire. Now, if you're a good American, you should take particular delight in mispronouncing Latin words. I know I do. let's face it, it's been a dead language for a long time, and it's a word Latin means hidden, and it was designed and always kept in Babylonian tradition to hide that what the elite were doing. All the universities used the language. We're stuck with this one, unfortunately for us. Well, fortunately, we had reformers, but all of them, to a man almost, were lawyers of the law of the city, the Roman code. That's what a Roman priest is. He's a lawyer of the Roman code, the canon law, and that's the code of Justinian. It's all the same with the codes of the most of the countries in the world. Well, that particular problem, premunire, has to do with treason. And what it said was, and we face it today, it's an ancient common law doctrine, and it is responsible for, in one way, the founding of America, because if Henry VIII had not broken faith with Rome, America wouldn't be here. What happened was this. Henry was frustrated. And what he did, of course, he did for selfish reasons. He was a nasty man. He killed half of his wives, had six of them, beheaded them for no reason, et cetera, et cetera. But God used him. He even killed the man that translated the Bible into English from the original tongue for the first time, William Tyndale. And then he took that Bible and took credit for it and passed it out to the English people. That's the kind of a nasty critter he was. But what happened in this case with this premunire? He was out hunting one time, Henry VIII, and he stopped in a local manor house to eat dinner. Of course, everybody had to stop and do what he wanted, and it was great to have the king sitting in your house. You didn't want to offend him. He might chop your head off. And there was a priest there, a priest of the Roman Church who was a reformer. He wanted to be, he was a protester. He became a Protestant. And he said to the king, when he heard the discussion, he said in his hearing, he said, you know, there's a problem here. The problem is this. All these Roman priests have taken an oath to obey the Pope of Rome, the emperor of the Roman see. And he said, that's contrary. How can you be loyal to that man and be loyal to your own country and your own king? As a matter of fact, he said, and we still say it, common law today, and we ought to say it, that loyalty divided is a misnomer. That's no loyalty at all. Even as lawyers, we're not allowed to divide loyalty with clients. And if we do, we're sanctioned for it. If the law is followed, because you can't, Jesus Christ put it this way, no man can serve two masters. Can't. No man can have two wives for the same reason, and no woman ought to have two husbands for the same reason. All of those things are a breach of loyalty. Loyalty is singular, singular, respecting any particular relationship. Well, he said this to him, and the light went on in Henry VIII's head. He said, that's right. And so he called all the priests together that were particular of a particular higher level, and he I think it was about 200 of them. He got them all together, and he was on a high platform, and they were in a room kind of down below him. And he said, well, here's the problem, gents. You're all guilty of treason. You took an oath to someone outside of England, to your own country and to your own king. Your loyalty was divided. You knew what you were doing, and you've got two choices. You can either admit you're guilty and you're wrong, or you can stick with Rome, and we have other plans for your head. Well, people were scared. Not a one of them peeped a word. And Henry waited a while, and then he said, well, I take your silence as acquiescence. And he fined them heavily, heavily. And that was the price of their heads. And they all paid it, and at that point they all became priests in the Church of England and without any loyalty to Rome. And that's how the Church of England began. And it wasn't for the right reasons all completely. Obviously, Henry had other ideas about why he was wanting to do it, namely he wanted to marry who he wanted to marry, but I shouldn't be too hasty to judge him. He did want a male heir to the throne. He didn't have one. He was having a hard time getting one, and that was a big deal in those days. Still is, I suppose, in some ways. And that's how it all started, but that's how premoniere came to the forefront in the common law world. We have the same problem today. We have men running for president of the United States who are citizens of another country, namely Ted Cruz. He's a citizen of Canada and a citizen of the United States. We call it dual citizenship. Dual citizenship is no citizenship at all. There was a time in America when that wasn't allowed. Why do we allow that? Why do we allow people to sit on the bench that are dual citizens? Why do we allow people who are appointed to high positions in the executive branch of the government, we call them the czars, that are citizens of another country? Why do we do that? Why do we tolerate it? I'm not sure. I think people are so ignorant of fundamental things, not complicated things, fundamental things, that they allow it to go on. Something should be done about it. Loyalty cannot be divided. You're either an American or you aren't. Ted Cruz is either an American or he isn't. I don't think he knows the difference. I shouldn't say that. I don't think he appreciates the difference. I think he full well knows that he's not qualified to run for president. And law is more important. It's more important that we follow the course. He doesn't have the right to do wrong. He doesn't have the jurisdiction, see? Jurisdiction, right, authority to do wrong. No man has the jurisdiction. No man has the authority to do wrong. And he's doing that. And there are a lot of other people doing the same thing. We're all guilty of sin. Understand that. Sin, the Bible says, is transgression of a law. There's another good, clean definition. Now, that's easy. What is sin? It's trespassing God's holy laws, and all of his laws are holy. They're set apart as special, and we don't want to do that, and our Constitution is substantially consummate with the law of God as I understand it. I've been looking at it a long time. If I find where it isn't, I'll say so. And our common law says anything. Our common law has always said anything in consonant with the written word of God. The laws of nature is God. That's what the Bible, that's the phrase our declaration uses for the Bible. The laws of nature is God. If our common law is in consonant with that anywhere, says our common law, that's not our common law. Our common law is consonant with the Bible, and anything said to be the common law that is not part of our common law. That's the doctrine of our common law, always has been. And Supreme Court's Justice Story and others have been, Justice Wilson said a similar thing, James Wilson. Well, that's the preliminary. Now, you talked about one other subject. Oh, it had to do with the trials, the court-martial trials, and how it is wrong at common law in a common law country to allow a man to subsume his wrongdoing in his superior officers. Adolf Eichmann, the Nazi, standing on the scaffold with a noose around his neck, was allowed to say final words, and he said this: I obeyed the law of my country and my flag. And any consequence of wrongdoing must be laid at the feet of my political superiors. In other words, I'm not responsible for all the murders I committed. Now, it's of note that Nazi Germany was a product of the law of Rome. Why do I say that? Because In the year 1900, the Code of Justinian became the official code of Germany, the law of Germany. They called it the Code of Bismarck. That's what enabled World War I. That's what enabled Germany to prosecute World War II, because the Code of Rome allows all power in an emperor. That's not a hidden fact. Anyone who's studied history ought to know that. And that's how Nazism came about. And Eichmann said, according to that, the law of my country and my flag, the Code of Rome, that's okay. And by the way, in every country in the world today, almost every country, with the exception of a few, about five common law countries and a few satellite jurisdictions, in every country in the world, it is a complete defense to any crime that one obeys the government. All of South America, all of Europe, all of China, all of Russia, all of Vietnam, all of the world is under some form of the Roman Code, with a small exception of, for example, Islamic countries, but they follow the principles of the Roman Code. The only countries that don't, well, we could say it this way, are the English-speaking world. But also, where the English-speaking world has had strong influence, the common law has much sway. For example, in India, the common law has much sway. People categorize it as a part common law country. South Africa is the other great exception. It's a kind of a hybrid situation. The Dutch reformers settled it, and it's a Roman law country, but they have no Roman code, but they follow the principles of the Roman code, and their courts cite to the Roman code. It's rather odd. But most of the world is under that code that says if you obey the government, it's a complete defense to any crime. That's not true in America. And when our boys were tried for war crimes after World War II, General George Marshall put out the general order to all court-martials, all courts-martial, and he said this: obedience to orders may be a mitigating factor, but it can never be the exonerating fact. Let me repeat that again. Obedience to orders may be a mitigating factor, but obedience to orders can never be the exonerating fact. Well, he was right, and Marshall was citing the difference between us, common law countries, and all of the rest of the world. Because in all of the rest of the world, they may not call the government God. They didn't call Hitler God in Germany. No, the Christianity was too strong. That sounded too ugly. But he had all the powers of God, and he was final. And what is the power of a God? It is one from whom his decisions, there is no appeal. That's what Hitler was. Now, in Japan, during the war, their emperor, they called him a god because they were comfortable with that. They had lived that way for centuries. Christianity had made the Germans uncomfortable with it, so they didn't say it, but they lived it the same as the Japanese. And that is the result of all the bloodshed that occurred. The result of that was the Roman civil code was put in place and followed, where man could subsume all of his responsibility in obedience to the government. We can't do that. If the government tells you to do wrong, oh, come back to that phrase, no man has a right to do wrong. I don't care who tells you to do it. I don't care who tells you to do it. I don't care what their threats are. I don't care what the consequences will be. That doesn't change a man's responsibility. That's what his right is. Right means duty. It doesn't change your duty. Peter said, Acts chapter 4, they were asked to testify falsely. Testify falsely. Say something to the tribunal that wasn't true, to the elders. They said, we can't do that. You fellows know that. We have a duty, a right, an authority, a jurisdiction to speak truth. And they said, you judge, you tell us, are we to obey God or men? And you know, there have been a lot of people in this world, not hundreds of thousands, millions, that have died rather than do what they believe to be wrong. Why? Because no man has the right, the jurisdiction, the duty to do wrong, the responsibility to do wrong, no matter who tells him. Of course, God would not tell us to do wrong, and Peter the Apostle tells us where we find the words of God and the will of God. The will, his law, is his will. We find that in the written, the laws of nature's God, written in our Bibles. And Peter the Apostle says, by the way, he says, there in the first chapter, he says, I was with Jesus Christ. We heard God speak out of heaven. But he said, we now have a much more sure word in the written scriptures. Much more sure. And in the Galatians, it says, Paul writing there says, if we or an angel out of heaven, an angel, even if he is an angel, he tells you any other thing. No. He said, you don't listen to that. Any other thing than what is written here. The tradition. That is, tradition means that which was handed to you, the writings, the writs of God. And I'm repeating common law doctrine when I say this, but let me say it again, though. No man has a right to do wrong. You may not be able to stop him. He may have a monopoly on force and violence, but you win if you're right, no matter what.
Okay, thank you, Brent. All right, we'll take one more caller. It's just a couple of minutes after 10. We'll take one more caller. Let's see. Go ahead, you got the mic. I'm not sure who that is.
Yeah, hi. This is my first.
Give us your first name
foray.
And your state.
Kathy from New York.
How you doing, Kathy?
I just found you guys online today. I was looking up court corruption and court observers, and you came up. So I was just kind of curious, and I also was kind of pleased to hear somebody say that attorneys are okay, because I happen to be one. But my problem was when I went to go on your site, being the honest attorney that I am, it said no attorneys allowed. So I didn't sign up, so I don't really know what you're about. So maybe you can
We're going to change that. Matter of fact, I thought we already did. We decided that
okay.
We would allow. Because one of the problems, of course, is with the bar attorneys. That's the main problem with our country, unfortunately. And
well,
but we also thought, you know, we haven't met Chris Ann Hall, but she's a lawyer. And, of course, we've met Brent Winter since, and he's a lawyer. And here's two people who are focused in on the common law and the Constitution. And so we've realized that, hey, maybe we could be helpful to lawyers, too. As long as they tell us they're lawyers, you know, we also do the same thing with anyone that's a politician. Anybody that's an elected individual, we ask them to identify themselves as that, and they can join. So we will change that.
Okay.
We apologize.
Oh, no need to apologize. I'm just kind of relieved because I was really curious about your site. And
well, hold on one second. Carl, are you out there? Can you make that change tonight? Let's see if Carl's online. If not, Gary, maybe you can talk with Carl, make sure Carl makes that change to the site. Go right ahead, Kathy.
Oh, that's really about it. I just wanted to ask you whether you have a presence in New York with court observers and with the people personally?
We have a presence in every state of the union. We've organized mm-hmm. across the entire nation, and we filed papers in all 94 federal district courts, even the four territories. We filed in those also, so all 94. And we're very active what's going on in Oregon right now with the BLM and the problem with the ranchers and the miners and the loggers, and also the murder or assassination of Lavoie Finnegan and Finnecum. And so we're very active. And, yeah, we're very active in New York. As a matter of fact, we're based out of New York.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, how interesting. Okay, did not know that.
Do you have a question for Brent Winters? He's the author of Excellence in Common Law. And by the way, being a lawyer, I don't know if you've read that book. You should read it.
Actually, I did write it down. I hadn't heard of it, but I come from CUNY Law School, which has a tradition of, you know, their motto is law in the service of human needs.
Uh-huh.
And they're, you know, a big public interest law school, and they do a lot of civil rights, and so that is kind of my, I guess, where I get my bent from about justice, and I enjoyed listening to the conversation about due process, and brought me back to my law school years when we were learning it in constitutional law, so it gave me a lot to think about. But I don't want to take up anybody's time. I'm just glad I can get on the site. Without being a liar, even though I'm already, that's my nickname because I'm a lawyer, right? That seems to be our nicknames these days. And
it's
what
unfortunate.
Really
it is
it,
unfortunate, yeah, that kind of a name has stuck to lawyers because they look at the Bar Association has destroyed the Constitution, and they've destroyed the common law in America and moved us into chancery law, chancery courts, and we're statutory. So we have a serious problem. But it is true that there are lawyers that are out there that are seeing the light, and I'm sure you're getting a lot of havoc from the system on positions you might take in the court. I don't know, it's pretty difficult to survive in that environment if you're going to do the right thing. So,
well, that's actually the problem that I see is that they you can't survive, and so the attorneys are sort of forced to, you know, even if they wanted to be honest, the system itself would make them unemployed. And when attorneys do try to speak out, they go after your license.
Right.
And so it's really a very sad situation. And I really
right, well, I'll
know.
Tell you what. If you don't have a question for
no, I'm
friend,
sorry. I don't want to take up. I don't want to.
Yeah,
take
because
up
I mean, I'd
time.
Like
Thank
to talk
you.
Some more with you, but I want to finish up with Brent first.
Of course. I'm sorry.
So
no, that was
question?
My only question is how I got on the site and whether that was
okay
and whether I could register. That was my main question. Thank you.
Yeah, do register and just well, you know, Carl should be fixing that. So we'll
okay, great.
But get back into the queue if you have any other questions, and because we'll be fielding questions, you know, from you know those of us from National Liberty Alliance. But right now, we just want to take at least one more question with Brent before he closes down. So, okay, thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, let's take our next question. Whoever that was, let's see. It looks like 770.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Go right ahead. What's your question for Brent?
Yeah, actually, I have three questions. I was listening to him speak about Roman priests are lawyers of canon law.
Yes.
Correct. They are. I would love to be able to do some research on that because I'm just very curious to that.
Well,
I would like to be able to explain it to. Go ahead.
Uh-huh. The law of the Roman Church is the canon law of Rome. And the canon mm-hmm. law of Rome is a form of the Code of Justinian. The Code of Justinian, promulgated in the latter days, well, the Roman Empire was waning by that time. It was written in Greek. And it persists throughout the world in three fundamental sources, three main sources. The French form, often called the Code Napoleon. Napoleon took it, put his name on it, just like Bismarck in Germany took it, put his name on it. And as Gibbon said in the Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, he said, the Pope of Rome is the ghost of Rome, sitting on the grave of Rome. And he adds, sitting on the grave of Rome, wielding the law of Rome. And that's what the canon law is. And to be a Roman priest is to not necessarily be a student of the Bible. As a matter of fact, I've had plenty of Roman priests tell me they don't know anything about the Bible. Well, indeed, that's not what they're taught. They're taught the common law, and they're to be Roman lawyers and different degrees of Roman lawyers. Lawyers of the law of the city. Our law traditionally is called, by distinction, the law of the land. And there's a difference between the two, and the fundamental difference can be expressed in many ways. I'll just give you one. Mankind only has two choices according to the Bible, and according to the covenants of God. Man will either tend toward dominating the land and making it productive according to the terms God gives him, or he will tend toward dominating his fellow man to milk him for as much as he can. And there are variations in between. But the covenant of God calls for man to dominate the land. Some people call it dominion. I don't like that. It's kind of another Latin word, comes from the reformers, the Roman priest. He is to take lordship over the land and make it produce according to God's terms. And if he concentrates on that and finds out how he fits into encouraging that, then to that degree he will not try to dominate other men and live off of them. It's the law of the land versus the law of the city. This is the history of mankind. And the Roman Code is the pinnacle of expression of the law of Babylon, the law of the city. And Maitland, the great English scholar, said, if we're going to understand the Roman law of the city, the Roman civil law, it's usually called, we must understand Babylon, because Babylon is the place where it was first organized under the emperor Nimrod, and we can find the accounts of that, well-preserved accounts, not only in the Bible, but from other sources. That's the difference. And the priesthood was brought, a while ago John mentioned chancery. Well, chancery is called chancery because it had a chancel. A chancel is a woven screen that allows a fellow to look through and see who's on the other side, but you can't look through. It's woven in such a way, it like a two-way mirror. That's a chancel. And that was what was used for centuries in the confessional booth of Rome, and in some places still is. And so the chancery is where the Roman priest pressed the jurisdiction of Roman law in the common law country of England. And the history of England is about one thing, the antagonism between the law of the Angles, the Saxons, the Danes, then the Picts, the Celts. That law was substantially the same, said Algernon Sidney, and indeed it was and still is. The antagonism between that and the encroachment of Rome onto the island of England, that spells the whole history. And with the encroachment of Rome, and later through the Roman Church came the Roman Code, it's the law of tyranny. China today is under the Roman Code. Russia, communist Russia, has always been under the Roman Code, and all of South America and all of Europe, as I'd said a while ago. It's the dominant in numbers, legal tradition in the world, always has been, and in the minority is common law. But amazingly, the common law countries of the English-speaking world have been prosperous. The common law has enabled us to be the greatest engine of wealth and prosperity the race of Adam has ever known. And that's not because we're smarter than other people. Indeed, I don't think we are as smart as some other people around the world. But where there's justice, where there's a possibility for justice, only the jury occurs here. There's a possibility for justice. Prosperity will be the result, but we're losing it. And I could cite the examples of how we're losing that. And it's an orchestrated effort. I talked to a fellow today. I talk to people a lot. People call me. It had to do with a tax case in a state. And the tax court there kept saying, as they argued the case, they said in their briefs, your board, speaking of the fellow on the other side of the legal dispute, your tax board, well, that's not his tax board. He's in an adversarial position. That's the other thing about our common law. It's adversarial. The rest of the world is inquisitorial. In an adversarial country, we go to court and fight. We fight a fair fight according to due process, the course of the common law. That's a fair fight. And indeed, we fight. In other countries, they don't fight. Two lawyers of the civil law, of the law of the city, go into court and them with the judge, who's not a lawyer at all, but a civil servant in the civil service system, who depends for his pay upon whoever's in power. They go into court, and the three of them together decide what they're going to do with the poor fellow before the court, whether he be in a criminal case or even in civil cases. It should sicken any American with common law sensibilities to go into a court in France. And if you're not sickened by what you see there, there's something wrong with you. Or to go to South America, you see the same thing. I know a fellow down in Argentina. We're on the radio every week, once a week, we're on the radio together. It's amazing. I cease to be amazed at what technology can do. But he's an American, lives down there, and he said, Brent, you can't believe what I'm seeing down here. And he's just trying to stay out of the way right now. But there are no courts, there are no juries, only tribunals and only inquisitions. Well, you can follow up on that. If you get the book, Excellence of the Common Law, I have a lot about that in there, in the history of Rome and the history of the university system, which was designed, the first university founded at the city of Bologna, in Italy. And that's why we say Bologna. Yeah, we say that yet today. But every university was spawned from that university in the 1000s, and the Pope of Rome expressed why he wanted to establish that university. And the priesthood, of course, they all said it. They wanted to supplant the influence of the Bible and replace it with the supremacy of human reason. which is exemplified, they said, in the code of Justinian. They called it, and they still call it in the Greco-Roman world, the Logos. Well, Logos is the word that John the Apostle used in John chapter 1, verse 1. He said, we've got the Logos. You guys don't have it. The law of the city, the law of Babylon, the law of the evil empire, you don't have the Logos. They called the Roman code, the code of Babylon, the Logos, the pinnacle of human reason. And John said, no. In the beginning was the Logos, and the Logos was with God, and the Logos was God. He, the Logos, was in the beginning with him, speaking, and then you read the rest of that chapter, you discover that he's speaking of Jesus Christ, the pinnacle of the revelation of God, the living law of God, the way. Jesus Christ said, I'm the way. Significantly, he didn't say, I'm a list of laws. He said, I am the, not an arthrus with the definite article, John 14, 6, I am the way, not any way, the way, and no man, here's process again, the how, no man, said Jesus Christ, can come to God the Father except he come through me, the door, and if you don't come through me, you don't come through that course, that way, that process, the how, you don't come to God at all. So just take all the rest of it. Anybody who claims to be a mediator between God and man, any priesthood, any vicar, any institution, said John Wycliffe back in the 14th century, all of that is of Babylon. It's of the religion, law, and government of the city. And we in America have been fortunate, and if we can just hang on to it, the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God, says our Declaration of 76. Blackstone says that phrase, laws of nature's God, refers to the law unwritten in the nature of things. That's our common law, unwritten, the laws of creation, of the physical world. And the laws of nature's God, the law written, the first unwritten, the second written. Justice Joseph Story called those two volumes, I call them two volumes of God's revelation of his will to man, his law. Justice Joseph Story called them natural religion, that's the law unwritten in nature, and revealed religion, that's the law of God written in the Bible. Now, I've got a choice. I can believe all this baloney that they're pumping out, that it's all right to sodomize each other. It's all right to sodomize little boys, says Justice Ginsburg. I can believe that and follow that. Or I can follow what I know to be true. That's against nature. That's the crime against nature. That's just one example. That's wrong. No man has a right to do wrong. That's a violation of due process, whether you call it procedural or substantive. People argue about that. But it's certainly, taken together, those two, it's the wrong way to do things. It's the wrong way to engage in sex. That's wrong. We got to get down and talk about this. It's a shame, the Bible says, to even talk to such of these things. What these people do, who are these people that have the levers of power and saying such mad things? I had a lawyer tell me not long ago, he's a member of the Supreme Court bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He said, I'm pulling my membership. I don't want to be a part of this. No way. Well, I understand what he's saying. It's smart. You don't want to be a part of it. You have to speak out against it if you know the true law. And it doesn't take a lawyer to know that sodomy is not the way to do it. It doesn't take a true lawyer, a licensed lawyer, I should say. It just, I like to say this too. I want to add this. Every man and every woman is a lawyer. You can't be a lawyer and not survive in this world. Listen, as one fellow said, when I step out on the street, I look both ways. Because I know a Greyhound bus, once it gets going, it doesn't stop for quite a while. Well, that's the laws of nature. You've got to pay attention to the laws of nature. Captain Preston, at the historic Battle of Concord, fellow went to see him when he was 92 years old, a young judge. He said, what motivated you fellows to go up against the best trained, best equipped fighting forces in the world, British regulars and German Hessians? Well, he said, he asked him if he'd been reading Sidney and Locke and Harrington about the eternal principles of liberty. You know, those were great philosophers. He said, no, I never even heard of those fellows. He said, we read only the Bible, the Catechism, Watts' Psalms and Hymns, and the Almanac. Well, you find out when you think about it, the Bible, the Catechism, Watts' Psalms and Hymns, and the Almanac refer to the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God. The Bible is the laws of nature. And the companion to the Bible is Watts' Psalms and Hymns. It's great, great hymns, biblical phrases, biblical progressions in Watts' Psalms and Hymns. So you got the Bible, and he knew that, he said. He was taught that. And then he said, we read the almanac. We never read philosophers. We read the Bible, Watts' Psalms and Hymns, and the almanac. Well, what was the almanac? The almanac was the compilation of the laws of nature, the laws of God set in motion in the nature of things. The signs of the seasons, when to plant your crops, when to breed your cattle, what to pay attention to with your turnips. And it had a little notch hole in the end of it, still does. You can still buy them in farm stores. So that every man could hang one in the feedway of his barn on a string and have it handy. And every woman could hang it with a string from the corner of her cupboard to have it handy when she was cooking and when she was gardening. The laws of nature, we live by them, and if we don't live, if somebody doesn't live by them, somebody we depend on, if we're not doing it ourselves, we're going to die. We're going to starve to death. The farmer will go broke. The rancher will go broke. He cannot plant when the legislature tells him to plant. Tom Jefferson said, if we ever get to the point that the government tells us when to plant and when to reap, we'll soon be in want of bread. You see, it doesn't take a highfalutin lawyer studying scholasticism, used to musty books and smelly libraries, to understand the first principles of God's law. And the writer of the Hebrews in the Bible wrote the Hebrews in chapter 5 and said, the trouble with you fellows is you may be Christians, but you're not enjoying your Christianity because you have forgotten the first principles. First principles.
Lost that first love.
Well, anyway, that's enough talk. I hope I gave you something to go on.
Yes, you did. But I also want to find out, Where can I find your book?
Oh, go to Amazon.com. You can get it there, they tell me. And also,
okay. You
can, Amazon.com. Matter of fact, then
you
can also
if you send us a link, we'll put your book up on our website, unless you want to just send them to Amazon or something. I don't know.
Okay, well, I can do that. Also, you can go to www.commonlawyer.com, commonlawyer.com. And go to the books button. Thanks, John, for maybe we can do that. I appreciate that.
Yeah, we'll talk maybe tomorrow or something.
Brent, what's your last name? I didn't get your last name.
Winters, W-I-N-T as in tango, E-R-S as in Sierra, like Shelley. I don't know how old you are. Maybe do you remember Shelley Winters and Jonathan
Winters? I do remember Shelley Winters.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the Poseidon Winter, actually.
And
two other things I want to put two other things out there you can answer at your leisure. But you also spoke about a breach of loyalty and loyalty being singular. And loyalty can't be divided. How can a lawyer who takes an oath to the bar and not their client?
I'm glad you brought that up.
Already.
Yeah, we can clear that up. I didn't take any oath to any bar, and I didn't take any oath to any man. I didn't take any oath to any court. I've taken the oath. I did take the oath when I became a lawyer to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And by the way, that's an ancient common law oath, an oath to the law of the land. And a lawyer, traditionally, in the common law world, has been called a sergeant at arms. At arms, A-T, important use of the preposition. Sergeant at arms, that means the servant of the law. And the oath of the lawyer is to the law, the fundamental law. And the oath of every American that enters public office is to the law also, to the Constitution of the United States. That ancient oath, by the way, was the oath that was taken in England, and it was called the oath of the law of the land. And to defend our Constitution, by the way, our Constitution is the supreme law of the land. That means it's due process. How things are to be done. How. And jurisdiction. Remember, no man has a right to do wrong. To defend our Constitution against all enemies foreign means to be willing to take up arms as a member of the militia. A member of the militia. And the second duty of a militiaman, to defend our Constitution against all enemies domestic, that means to be willing to serve on a jury and to sue at court if the law of the land is being violated. Now, that, by the way, I want you to watch this close, is the double duty of every militiaman, the double duty of every militiaman at common law, called at common law in the old Anglo-Dane speech, the FYRD, F-Y-R-D. Today we call it the militia. There are four militia clauses of our Constitution, four, and they have been ignored for about 175 years. The Second Amendment is the fourth of the four militia clauses. Why they're ignored is part of the reason why the militia has the duty to guard justice. Every man must be a lawyer to that point. As John Fortescue said in the 15th century, he was a common lawyer in England. He told the future king of England, you don't have to know the law like a lawyer knows it. Just as a theologian knows things that the Christian doesn't know, but every Christian man must know the fundamentals. That's what the writer to the Hebrews says. And every Englishman must know, Blackstone said the same thing in his volumes, must know the fundamentals of our common law, the laws of nature, and then also the laws of nature, nature's God. And if the laws of nature's God written does not back up the laws of nature written, it will all fall apart. It will all fall, and it is. And so the two things that John Wycliffe, the first translator of our Bible into English, although not from the original tongues, he said we must have a two-pronged attack. And he did it. He's known best for translating the Bible into English, the entirety of it, for the first time. But it's ignored how much stressing and even more stress he put upon getting the Roman civil law out of Oxford and supplanting it with our common law, the laws of nature. Those two things, he said, we must get the Bible into English so that every man can read it. And then we must get our common law in the courts, and we must harry out of our courts the Roman priest and the Roman civil law, the canon law of Rome. Our liberties depend upon it, and that's why America is here, because we got the Bible in English, thanks to John Wycliffe. Of all men in history, in the history of our culture, who had it wired and understood, John Wycliffe, none surpasses him. None. None of the reformers. And he was called the morning star of the Reformation. Then the flower, yet today he's called the flower of Oxford scholarship. What a man. And to read more about him and to understand his attack to try to get his country back. And what it didn't happen in his lifetime, but if he could only see what has happened because of what he did. And he set this thing in motion. And it's up to us to keep it going. Take inspiration from those that have God has allowed to give us inspiration. He's not God, he's just a man. But he flashed like lightning for a short period of time, rose above the mundane, it illuminated all below him, and then he fell back to earth. And now he should be understood to be like the rest of us. As the Bible says, these men that do great things are just men like unto us with the same passions, the same fears. But yet God, in his wondrous works, uses the least of us. And he will use you no matter what you think of yourself or how lowly you think you are. God will use the small to confound, he says, the wise of this world. The insignificant, man, I've seen it. I've seen it a lot. I've seen it, and I can think back through my life, and I can see how often God has confounded the wise of this world with the least esteemed among us. And by the way, the Bible tells us that those least esteemed are the ones that we're supposed to put on the jury. You can read it in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 1 through 7.
If you ever get the chance to come to LaGrange, Georgia, there's a place called the Bible History Museum. It used to be called the Bible Antiquity Museum. It is amazing because it brings the Bible to life. Like a lot of the terms and a lot of the things that it talks about when it talks about the shepherd standing in the gate, you'll see what that actually looks like. The wine, it's a small place in LaGrange, Georgia. They also have one in Jerusalem. It's amazing. It brings the Bible in a totally different light. Things that you've read and you've conceptualized for years and years and years, like threshing floors, you actually see one.
Uh-huh.
It is amazing. It is truly amazing.
Well, if I'm down there, I will stop. I don't go to Georgia very often, but
that's a reason to go.
Maybe it is. I appreciate you asking the question, giving me an opportunity to address the question. I hope I said something that was responsive enough for you to satisfy you for a while.
Yeah, okay. You gave a lot of scripture. I do a lot of study. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, thanks for the questions, and thanks a lot, Brent, and thanks for being here. And Brent will be back next Monday, Lord willing, and he'll pick up another subject, and we'll go through it again. Thanks
you
much
know, John,
for being with us, Brent. Yep.
Can you hear me, John, still?
Yes, yes.
John, you suggested a subject. I thought I'd just mention it, and then I'll get off.
Uh-huh.
I've lost it here, but we'll... It'll be good, I hope, Lord willing.
Yeah.
Oh, I found it just a minute. When I found the book, and but here it is. You had mentioned talking about jurisdiction.
Jurisdiction, yes. And also, I might have brought up sheriff, too. Did I bring up sheriff?
Yes, you did, and that's the one I have, due process, jurisdiction, sheriff, and Magna Carta.
Okay. Yeah, I'd like to do sheriff next week because there's a big interest, of course, in that, in the sheriffs in the nation today, and we're sending out letters concerning that. And matter of fact, let's try to talk tomorrow. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about that. Maybe you could share some information with me concerning sheriffs that I might want to put into this paper that I'm putting together for them.
Okay, John. Thanks again, and thank you all for listening. Appreciate you.
Okay, thank you. We'll talk to you tomorrow, and we'll see you next week. All right,
thanks, John.
Gerard.
Bye.
Thank you. Good night. Gerard, you could take over now. Mic's yours. Let's see. We'll take our next question. Gerard, you here? It looks like, is that Rhoda? Rhodey? R-H-O-D-E.
Rhode Island, Jim.
How you doing?
Hey, John. I just wanted to say your mic is perfect.
Great, great. Yeah, what I did is I'm calling in off of Skype now and not going into the browser, so I guess the browser's the problem for me.
Well, maybe it could be your mic or who knows, but your voice is just perfect tonight. That's what I want to say. I had a few questions for Brent, but he's gone, so that's...
He'll be back next week, and we'll try to call for the people who have, were in the queue and missed the opportunity. We'll ask for those to come in first and give him the opportunity. So.
Excellent. Thanks a lot.
All right. Did you have any other questions or comments or anything?
That's pretty much it. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Hey, Gerard, are you out there? You got to hit *6, I guess, to open up your mic. No, actually, you just got to unmute yourself. All right. We'll take the next question while we're waiting for Gerard. Scott?
Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay, great. I was wanting to ask the gentleman you had on, but I'll go ahead and mention it here. And everybody here brings up the Magna Carta a lot. Well, listening to Chris Ann Hall, which I do a lot, I love that girl, and Publius.
Yes, a lot of us do, yep.
But anyway, she talks about the other four documents a lot in it, and without the five documents, which granted us the rights most of the rights we had in the Bill of Rights.
Yeah, well, the documents, bear in mind that the documents did not grant us the rights. The documents supported the rights that God had granted us.
I agree. You're right. I shouldn't have used that wording. Anyway, I was just wondering why nobody mentions those, especially the gentleman that was on here. He did go back to the Magna Carta, but he never mentioned the other documents.
Well, he did mention the Declaration of Independence. He did mention the Constitution. And of course, the Constitution and the Bill of Rights is, one document ultimately, even though we have them as amendments. It wasn't really an afterthought. Matter of fact, when the Constitution was hammered out, it was agreed upon that a Bill of Rights would be applied, but they wanted to get things moving. So they went forward. And the Bill of Rights, I believe, was 2 years later, followed in 2 or 3 years.
Right, but my point being is for 700 years, as British subjects, we had those rights. We inherited those rights all along. Even if you took the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and everything away, we would still have every right in the Bill of Rights, except for, I think, the last two.
Absolutely, and we have plenty of rights that aren't even in the Bill of Rights. So, yeah, there are. We do have rights are unalienable. And you're absolutely right. Without the paper, we still have them. The problem is we have, places of power in governments. It draws tyrants. And every time you get a position of power, tyrants seek to take that control there. And, of course, things get us to the point where we actually become enslaved to their systems that they set up in order to serve them. And that's been the problem with mankind, and it's been the problem since the very beginning. But yeah, our rights are unalienable. We can trace them back, of course, really all the way to the creation. But you know, we go back. I think it's 1400 BC when Israel, as a nation, was ruled under God, and they had 400 years of absolute success under God until they asked for a king. But again, they had unalienable rights, just like us. They had all the rights we had. And of course, they were able to exercise them a lot more than we could. We're restricted to many of the rights that we have, and that's the problem with our nation. And that's why we're here doing what we're doing with National Liberty Alliance, developing the jury system back into the nation under the common law.
Well, I think what really gets me is the five documents were created. The ones I'm talking about, you know, starting with the 1100 Charters of Liberty, and going through the Magna Carta and so forth. But anyway, they were created with a sword to the king's throat because just, you know, the king had violated just one of those liberties, one of those rights each time. So they kept adding paperwork to it.
Do bear in mind that they did repent of that, and the charter was changed to permit the life of the king under any circumstances. They should never have threatened the life of the king. So they did repent of that. Unfortunately, some people, matter of fact, we do know somebody who has taken the Magna Carta, the power and the authority of the Magna Carta, as if that in itself had certain authorities. But concerning the fact that, you know, if the king didn't behave, to take off the head, and they are trying to apply that to government, and that brings in violence. And brings in the denial of due process even to tyrants. I mean, look, even tyrants deserve due process. We have to come above them. And they even deserve mercy, at least the consideration of mercy. And so the jury must consider that when these people are tried, and I do believe they're going to be tried, when they go into trial, we have to make sure that the juries understand that at the final moment and the final ending of their conclusion, they need to sit and discuss mercy, whether it can be given or not.
Right, and in most of these cases, well, I think in all of them, for a while, the king kept his head.
Yes,
I'm just saying that he brought tyranny down on the people and violated their rights. Their God-given rights, and they rose up and, you know, made remedy, shall we say. Now, my point being is, you know, our government is violating almost every right we have, and nobody's really, I mean, except for a few people like us, nobody's really doing much of anything.
Well, that's because of ignorance. And, you know, remember, I know myself, I was ignorant for quite some time, too, trying to figure things out, and until my eyes were opened and I started to come to an understanding of the common law, of the Constitution and how it got developed. So people are ignorant to the Constitution. Look at our sheriffs, they're totally ignorant to the Constitution, and they're finally realizing it. They're coming to the realization that there's problems, and they're not sure what they can do, because they are hearing the message that they can do something, but they don't know what. So we're going to tell them.
Well, I just thought I'd bring that up. I appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Gerard, you back yet? Missing in action here. Maybe someone can give a call to Gerard, see if he's coming on tonight. I know he was coming on. He was in the room. Okay, let's take the next caller. Let's see, that would be 408 area code.
John?
Yep.
Yes. Dr. Fred here, how are you?
How you doing?
I'm very well. I really don't have a question for Brent. I wanted to just say, some of the things he said were tremendous truths that I believe that your constituency and others need to know about. You know, if you go to John 14:6, Jesus said, I'm the way, the truth, and the life, and no one cometh unto the Father but by me. You know, when we deviate from the truth, you no longer have truth. And that's where we are, whether you can call it, and historically call it the Roman papacy or the Roman government or anything, even with the Israelis, when they deviated from the truth, that's when they became vulnerable to their enemies. But whenever they acknowledged the truth and followed it, God was always on their side. when David went to the Valley of Giants in 1 Samuel 5, there the Philistines had heard about him. And he was just a young whippersnapper king, and they were going to pulverize the Jews. And David said to the Lord, "You want me to fight him? And I'll go down and do it." And the Lord said, "Yeah." David said, "I'll go down and do it, but will you go with me?" And, of course, when the Lord said, "Yeah, sure, I'll go," and they went down there and they creamed the Philistines and literally changed the name of the Valley of Giants to Jehovah Perez, the God of the breakthrough. At that instant, David said, it was like a rushing water came through and just broke its way in. That's what God wants to do. I believe with my whole heart and remain very prayerful for you and your ministry, because not only what you're doing has a civil value, but it's a ministry. And your ministry, but it's an insurmountable job, because you're dealing with some people who have taken the lie and made it the truth, saying, as the constabulary, we have the jurisdiction, or we have the right, whatever you want to call it, to break the law in order to enforce the law. And as long as that mentality exists within the constabulary, everything you do, everything, is pushing a noodle, a wet noodle, uphill. And as long as we know, and you can't do it on your own, John, my advice to you is to get girded with the things of the Lord, get prayerful people behind you, and where you get, if any man lack wisdom, let him ask of God, where God gives you the wisdom, And the people who will go down into the valley with you, because David went down there by himself, king or no king, sword or no sword, weaponry or no weaponry, and he got his ass kicked. But when he said, "Lord, I'll go, but go with me," that made the difference. The massive, outnumbered Philistines were assigned their death warrant. And what he said about Hitler tonight is true. If it wasn't for God's intervention with Hitler, you and I'd be speaking German today. You and I, Hitler was a mastermind in doing what he did. Where he made a mistake is he picked on the wrong group of people. If he tried to kill all the Irish or tried to kill all the Italians or any other ethnic group, but when he picked on God's people, and Genesis chapter 12. Came into play, those that bless you, I'll bless, and those that curse you, I'll curse. He signed his death warrant. And that's what you need, John. You need to get God behind you to sign everybody's death warrant that gets in the way of what God wants to do with you. That's my comment, and we're doing. God is blessing. We filed our 2241s. We've got, I don't know if you know Dr. Black from the University of Missouri, at Kansas City, helping us, and we're getting things done. We're going to get them done, and I'll let you know when we succeed. But this is the year of Jubilee, my friend, and every day I put my foot on the floor, it's been a day of expectation. I am excited. One-sixth of the year is gone, but we haven't manifested what all we have. We have it. It just hasn't manifested itself yet. So I wanted to encourage you and encourage that fellow. He's a very brilliant speaker, and he's full of wisdom and full of knowledge and history. But the bottom line is if we don't have God undergirding us in this battle, we lose.
Well, amen to that. We appreciate your words, and we do agree with that. It is the premise behind us. It is the look at we, and we've said this often. We of ourselves, we don't have a chance against these people. They're very extremely powerful. They control everything. And exactly. It's going to take God to do the fight, not us. All we have to do is just the right thing. That's all we have to do. We don't have to do nothing more. Just do the right thing, whatever it is that's before us, and God will take care of the battle. And we're seeing some real big things happening. I'm telling you, things are about to break.
My expectation is that God's going to answer prayers, and we're praying for you. My son Kurt said a while, way back early in his incarceration, that when this is all over, they won't say, "Dad, help me." They won't say, "John Duresh, help me." They won't say, "Manya, help me." They won't say, "Mom, help me." They won't say, "This one, help me, that one." They're going to say, "Look what the Lord hath done." And that's the mindset. It was his mindset early on. It's his mindset now. And believe me, even in disappointment, and sometimes when things don't go exactly as we anticipate they should or would, we say, look what the Lord hath done. So I appreciate you, John. I got onto the wrong number, so I didn't get to hear that brilliant man speak, but I'll listen again next week.
We do have it on recording, and he was with us once before. In fact, he was with us the first of the year, and we asked him, of course, if he would speak every week, and he said he would. So hopefully, he'll be able to make it every week here with us and give us, 40 minutes or more of his time, because it really is going to benefit us and our knowledge, and give us.
I'll note you when we see what we expect to happen with Curtin Scott.
Things are happening from the other end. I think we're very close to enforcement, extremely close. I can't even tell you how close we are. So happens, let me tell you, it's going to break across the entire nation.
Well, we're praying for that to happen. It'll be wonderful with my eyes to see that. The Lord knows that, and he said if we delight ourselves in the Lord, he'll give us the desires of our heart. That's a desire of mine, to see this thing turned around. And for truth to be exalted, as Jesus said, the truth. There, anything that deviates from it is not truth. And we can't get the constabulary to believe that. They believe a lie, they teach a lie, they practice a lie, and there's no truth in it. And so as we see this happen, we're going to see it soon rather than later. I'm getting older every day and closer to glory every day, and I want to see it before they put dirt on my head.
Well, amen. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Right,
God bless you, John. We had a couple of mortgage cases hit. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say we had two of our mortgage cases that were closed. Of course, they don't tell you why, but they closed them. We had paperwork filed in them. When they start feeling their skin sizzling, then they run. And that's the only victories that we usually get is them running. You know what I mean? And
they will always close a book on something that's going to pinch them.
They'll
close it first because they know they're going to be. They'll take a minor loss in order to gain a major loss. They'll sacrifice a skirmish rather than lose a battle.
But the
bottom line is, again, we have truth on our side. We know it. Our bones tell us. Our spirit tells us. We have the Word of God to tell us. And as long as we line ourselves up with truth, realizing that anything that deviates from the truth is not truth. People just don't know that. They just don't. They don't want to comprehend that. And I'm sorry to say that a man like you, Brent, gets in a room with 1,000 people and does an eloquent presentation and gives his historical backgrounds and all of the neat things he knows and can share. When that room empties, less than 1% of the people will go out there and try to do something. And when the most of those that have tried come up against the wall that says, well, we're the constabulary, we'll do what we want to do, and you go fudge it, and they say, okay, we quit. So you have such a minuscule portion of people who absorb that time and that meeting, go out and trying to do something. But putting God in that equation, it gives us a minority vote, a majority vote from a minority vote. So that's all we need to do. We need to keep our focus on that. John, you need to get out of the bottleneck, and you need to get some people behind you to help you, and you need to get down in that valley and say, I'll go, Lord, but I'm not going without you.
Amen, amen. But we do have a lot of people behind us now. Look, there's a lot of people working behind the scenes, and there are lots of things happening.
Right.
And we're going to be breaking a lot of big news soon. And
We'll pray for you continually. I haven't been on the line for a long time, but I wanted to encourage you, and I do enjoy that, Frank Fella, and I look forward to hearing them again next week. God bless you. Thanks for taking my call.
All right. Okay. Gerard, you've got it from here?
Yeah.
Okay. Hit the next button. I'm not going to touch. I'm going to mute
up.
I got it.
It takes a second for it to click in, but I did it. Okay. You've been unmuted. I can't really read who it is, though.
Okay. It's Ron in California.
Hey, Ron. How you doing?
So, I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Good. Very well. Thank you.
Early on, before you came on, I'm not sure if you were listening, but Donald Trump was brought up. John asked, he said that you had received some information and maybe there would be more information. Would you like some more information about his take on federal land ownership?
Well, I did put a URL in the text chat of the op-ed that he did. And I think it was Alex Jones's guy there was reading his words. I didn't actually hear Trump say it, but he wrote an op-ed. Very, very good stuff. Unbelievable. Yeah, he sounds like us. It's unbelievable.
He does. Yeah. It's from the Reno Gazette Journal. And I just got a couple lines here. I'll just read it for everybody if you want to.
Oh, go right ahead. Yeah, it's really good. Go ahead.
Okay. So it says Donald Trump is taking on a new issue, federal land ownership. In a new op-ed, this is dated, by the way, January 12, 2016. In a new op-ed for the Reno Gazette Journal, the Republican presidential frontrunner rails against the, quotes, draconian rule, end quotes, of the Bureau of Land Management and the Obama administration's, quote, land grab, end quotes, in the western United States. Quotes, the BLM controls over 85% of the land in Nevada, end quotes, Trump explains, quotes, in the rural areas, those who for decades have had access to public lands for ranching, mining, logging, and energy development are forced to deal with arbitrary and capricious rules that are influenced by special interests that profit from the D.C. rulemaking and who fill campaign coffers in Washington, politicians, end quotes. Last few sentences. On Thursday, Trump told the New York Times he would, and of course, I think this goes back to when the wildlife refuge was being held by
right.
people in Oregon. And it says, on Thursday, Trump told the New York Times he would end an ongoing dispute between Oregon ranchers and federal officials that's culminated with a group of armed protesters staging an ongoing occupation of a federal wildlife refuge with a, quote, phone call, end quotes. So there's a guy who's going to be decisive, definitive, and very efficient. One other thing, there is one other a bit on a couple of lines. This is also from the Reno Gazette, and it's published on March 9th. But I think it's more current to the state of his public for his campaign. And it says, published with little fanfare in a Reno Gazette journal ahead of last month's Nevada caucus, the billionaire real estate mogul wrote, the BLM's reluctance to release land, in combination with the failure to enforce immigration laws, is, quotes, damaging the economy, lowering the standard of living, and inhibiting natural economic growth, end quotes. How do you like them potatoes?
Boy, he just laid it right out perfect, exactly like it's going down. That's pretty good. And it's amazing that it came out in January, and nobody heard anything about it. They didn't want that out while they were in the refuge.
No.
They finally figured they would never leave. They'd wait for Trump to get elected. But anyway, that was very good. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Have a great evening, and God bless everyone. God bless what's going on. I'm really interested to hear more from Brent Winters and the news that's not being talked about that John is referring to that's going on in the background. Of course, everything in its own time, and that's right.
Yeah.
We'll be glad to hear what's going on.
Okay, thank you very much.
God bless.
Okay,
Bye.
We're going to go to the next caller here. Give it a minute here to come up.
What is it?
Hello?
Harley, is that you? Yeah, go ahead.
I am engaged in a long battle process over my property. My 90 acres on the Deerfield here in Vermont, and I'm going to do your process, the habeas corpus. We've gotten our hands on our docket. Cost us $107 for our own documents. Yeah, it's ridiculous from the court. And I also caught on one of the previous nightly meetings that I need to keep delaying properly. I've already been served a writ of possession. I've been served trespass. We're holding ground. I've made videos on social media. I've personally engaged the sheriff. If anybody wants to look on YouTube, it's Earth Geek. Also look up People's United Bank. You look up James Hastings. He's another gentleman who's had trouble with People's United Bank. And this has been terrorizing me for 2 years. And they forced me into doing bankruptcy process, and then they just hammer and tong in bad faith and with false process, just beat them down. And I was in the process of making payments this summer, and they just summarily canceled my bankruptcy without me even being present. My lawyer recused herself and said she didn't have time. I had to go pro se. I'm dyslexic. I'm on Social Security. A little background there. So my main nuts and bolts problem now is that I need to take this beyond the local county superior court to Supreme Court to get some more time. Does that sound logical?
Yeah, you should be out of the county court anyway. You know, you're not going to get anywhere in the county court at all, ever, from our experience, you know. So you should go into the federal court, and that really, that should stop them. You know, they don't always do that, though, so it's an uphill battle. But you should definitely look at, they're violating your due process. You don't talk about the case. You just talk about the things that they didn't do and how they violated your due process. You know, a lot of the stuff they did ex parte or in rem when you weren't there, that's all violation of your due process, and that's what you set your case up on in the federal court with. You know, all the other things you don't really need to get into because the Supreme Court won't take it. They'll look for an excuse to throw it back to the lower court, so you don't want to give them that. So that's what I would do if I were you. I don't want to get real specific with it, but that's
well,
kind
I
of
do
what
need
we're...
to get specific because I'm really having a hard time getting brass tacks and process.
Well, we
this
can't.
Again.
We can't
I've
do
got
that
dyslexic
here.
In it. Well, the
yeah,
only
I'm not.
I mean,
I'm not even
some...
qualified to give you that information, so I can't. I can't help you here tonight. You know. And it gets quite long. You know, this is an informational show for everybody. You know, did you start
well,
the process through Linda, with Linda filing the paperwork? Did you
well,
go
yes,
on?
I am going to do your process and, you know.
Well, that process takes you. That process takes you into the federal court. That's what that's about.
Yeah, but,
so when
but if you didn't catch what my interim issue is, and I'm just really looking for resources. I don't want to bog down the group, and I don't want to stand forth too long here. But what I'm trying to do is put it into the Supreme Court of Vermont to get myself a little more time, and I'm in dialogue with the sheriff. He has expressed constitutional issues. I have delivered paperwork to
him. Let me tell you something about the sheriff. I don't care what kind of guy.
He's used as a Pinkerton so far. I mean, basically.
Well, look it. They have an easier time standing up to the federal government than the local government because the local government really hits him where the politics is and where the rubber meets the road. So, I mean, not to say that they couldn't do that on the federal level, but I have found that it's much easier for a sheriff to stand up against the feds than it is, you know, than it is for him to stand up against a local court or a local judge. Although that's not a reason why he shouldn't, especially if you're showing him that they're doing crimes. You know, if he doesn't do the right thing, he's guilty of felony rescue. You know, I mean, when you show him things and you show him that they're crimes. You know, he's bound to
do something.
Well,
that's what he seems to be receptive to, not sorry to cut you off, is that, you know, if I show him in good faith that I am still in a litigation with these guys in a tort and, you know, that I'm appealing this to the higher court in Vermont and, you know, he can avoid, he can have some fig leaf to not, you know, come
Absolutely.
In here because I'm going to fully... resist.
Look at, you could
I mean,
be, you
way,
could be.
I'm going to make them look like a horror, you know.
Look at, you could be appealing it to the higher court in Vermont, or you could be appealing
exactly.
it to the federal court. It doesn't matter. You're still
I'm
in a
do
tort.
Both, but in the meantime, I know that you guys are backlogged. I know it's going to take a while to get through your process.
Yeah, but if you got
in
a
meantime,
dialogue with your sheriff, look at, if you got a dialogue with your sheriff,
hang my hat on.
Right. So put the papers in. Write the papers. Get it going. I mean, you obviously are still in a tort with them. You have paperwork for that, no? to date.
The point is, I just got a summary judgment dismissing my request to get a different venue, dismissing my request to have a discovery process, and I kind of expected it. But then the lawyer shouted me down as a sovereign citizen and all this crap, and you know, it's like they use this as a huge cudgel, and you know, of course, that's their magic that they're you know, dealing in. Their satanic BS, you know.
Right.
But, you know, they're saying that I need to both do a notice of appeal, and then 10 days later I need to do an appellant docket statement to the same Supreme Court. You know, it's just, it's busy.
Well,
time.
That's
I don't want to go off the reservation and be accused of contempt when I go up there for a hearing. I want to know how to stay on point. And I'm just going to give you this. It would be good to have some examples because, again, I got this suggestion from John in a previous caller who had people banging on her door, and I got drone flights, I've got sheriff drive-bys, I got state police helicopters, weird stuff, man, because I'm very, very active on social media, and I'm calling these guys out for who they are, and I think every one of us should go and call these guys out for being maces and collusion. There's so many Corsonises, this Judge Corsonis, there's a law firm in Rutland that has all Corsonises, and he took over for another Corsonis in the same Bennington County.
Well, what I'll tell you is I don't usually get involved in the state courts because what we do is once they violate our due process, we file a habeas corpus to get out and get into the federal court, and so far they have always defaulted. So it takes us out. We give them the notice of default. We go into federal court.
Yeah.
I don't have to file this and file that and jump up and down and sing Maggie May and all this other stuff they want me to do. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that you can't do that because especially.
Well, I've studied a bunch of this UCC stuff, but I follow what you know Occam's Razor. You know, kind of what John was talking about. Don't give a dog a bone. You know, go in there humbly and just continually box them in
with
the questions about what the jurisdiction is and what they've deprived you of. But I need examples of that, and I think it would be useful to a lot of other people to have just some basic examples of how do you cleanly put this into the next level up, because people don't know. We just are told no, and we're treated like serfs.
Right. Well,
treated like invalids and stupid people, and we're treated like that by our own lawyers because they have much more business with each bank that they're dealing with in a bankruptcy than they do with any of their clients.
Right.
And they're told what to do and what's going to happen to this guy behind the scenes. She wouldn't even have a cup of coffee with me and talk to me, and, you know, and I would go in there like the mushroom treatment and just had no idea what was going to happen. And they tried to deprive me of speaking at all whatsoever. And the first time that they dismissed my bankruptcy, she didn't warn me for it, that it was even on the table. And all of a sudden that happened, and I didn't even know I was going to be able to apply again. But then
well,
the second time,
look
it was like paper airplane.
You should give us your email address.
I've been in touch with you guys. I'm joined up. I tried to send in a question about this basically last week, and it wasn't found in the system, and I was a little shy to get on.
This is not the call where we do that. You need to talk to somebody
person.
And
my state guy is an engineer. He just doesn't have the, you know.
Right. We'll get you something that you can look at. Look, not everybody can do this, but it sounds like to me that if you get an example, that maybe you'll be able to make heads or tails of it. So
I just don't want to be off the reservation too far. I just want to keep it, you know, clean and be able to defend myself and go up there. And I need to know about things like should I put in the reservation of rights business or should I avoid it? And, you know, I've gotten mixed messages all over the place and this kind of stuff.
So you're Harley.
Have some examples of how to stall. I'm Harley. Yeah.
You're Harley from Vermont. So if I tell Linda that, she has your number, or that's what you're. Are you registered on the site? Is that?
Oh yes, sir. Yes.
Okay.
And
so then I got a
right
couple
on
things.
Track. We're gonna.
We can send you to look at and hopefully they'll help. Okay.
Beautiful boy. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Okay.
And
thank you very
God
much.
God bless everybody. Have a great night. This has been really helpful.
Yeah. You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Hello.
Hello. Who's it? Who do I have here? 2412. Give me a name and a state.
All right. Jeremiah, California.
Okay. Thank you. How's it going? Mm-hmm.
Not too bad. A little headache, but I got some good info.
Okay.
I would like to share.
Ready for good info.
All right. I got a couple things for you guys. In response to the last caller, I just made a couple of notes. By the way, you guys, I work for you guys. I do the Common Law Advisory Committee stuff. I'm doing a lot of shepherdizing of case law. I'm doing just kind of, you know, helping to do some proofing of some stuff for you guys, too, on the Common Law Advisory Committee. But first of all, for the last caller, the go to the federal court with your federal question and file for removal of the issue to the federal court, and you can do that under 28 U.S. Code 1446, procedures for removal of civil actions. And so you go and do that and make sure that you meet the requirement. Let me ask the guy this. I don't know if he's still on or not, but if it's within 30 days after you received the service of a copy of the initial pleading, right, then I believe that you can get it removed to the federal court, whichever. Yeah. So that's that. Let's see. What else? Well, I have come to jump real quick here. Hopefully that helped the last caller. And I'm going to go ahead and jump over here real quick to something else that I saved for you guys. What do you want to say? Something?
No, go ahead.
Okay. I'm going to check out my screenshots real quick. Because I was just looking at the general federal common law. I'm going to read this case, okay? Now, you know Erie Railroad denounced the whole idea that there was some sort of general federal common law, but the rule is established by decision of Supreme Court that state statute impressing a trust against assets of collecting bank. I mean, it's not the issue that we're all dealing with, but in the event of insolvency could not be applied to national banks was not overruled by subsequent decision of Supreme Court in Erie Railroad Company v. Tompkins on theory that the earlier rule was decided under federal general common law, existence of which was denied by the subsequent decision. That means Erie basically denied the general federal common law, but they had to, they can't deny that there's a common law. Now I want to jump from that, right, to just one image of my my other screenshot that goes in harmony with that last quote, which is from a bar review textbook that I am looking in. This is from contracts. And we're talking about a unilateral contract, right, or a bilateral contract, but most and the critical distinction, basically. And what I noticed this morning when I was reading it was that in a unilateral contract, the contract is formed only the offeror has executory duties. The offeror has executory duties. And I was thinking, well, who made the Constitution? Who wrote it? Well, it was the Convention of States, right? Or was it the federal government? Was it D.C.? This is a good question for you or for the guest. Was it D.C. that wrote, you know, the Constitution and the states approved it? I believe that was what it was. And if that is the case, then the offeror has the executory duties, which is why I believe we have an executive branch of government, because it is common law at its core, the government, the system of government. And federal simply means the agreement of the parties. Okay, I'm done. You know, that's it.
Yeah, I had to unmute myself. I'm sorry. No, you're right. And look, we have a common law. The Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, those are common law documents. And this republic is run on common law. So for anybody to deny that there's federal common law, that's ridiculous. So
Thank you very much.
Oh, excellent. No problem. I also want to give out my email address for anyone interested in having me share with them some of my findings, because I'm just a researcher.
Go ahead, put it out here.
It's Second Son of Donald. Second Son of Donald at gmail.com. And I will send you links to my folders and files, just kind of put there in the subject what your issue might be, and I'll try to maybe send you something, you know, relevant. But if you just want administrative procedures, I can do that too. I can just send you a boatload of stuff, but just, I can just, you know, I want to connect with people and help some people that really have immediate needs, you know. Of course, I can't, this is, you know, you can entertain these ideas all day, okay, because that's what it's for. It's for entertainment. So have a good time.
Okay, thank you. Very good. That was pretty slick, but I agree. It's for entertainment. Don't get into trouble. We're all being entertained. Okay, the next caller. Who do we have here? You've been unmuted. I don't know if you can hear me. Oh, it just jumped up. Hey, Maud, how you doing? You're very low.
I just got in the call very late, but... you know, I don't know if people know that mortgages are trusts. Do they know that?
That a mortgage is a trust?
Yes. Mortgages are trusts. And when you sign your agreement with a bank, you are the donor. You are giving the bank, you're making the bank trustees. And there is a method of removing them from the trust by taking away their trusteeship. And I just was at my lawyer's on Friday last week, and he confirmed that mortgages are trusts. Not all mortgages, but most mortgages are trusts. And I think people should look into that, because this could save us a lot of grief.
Yeah, I've heard of people removing the bank as trustee. I'm not sure how that procedure goes, but...
Well, I don't exactly know either, but maybe I'll ask my lawyer about how you do that.
Well, I think there's plenty of information out there on it. You know, it's been done before, so it's not like it's top secret. So.
Listen, I was away, and I'm coming into this conversation a little bit halfway in, but look at if the mortgage is a trust, then that makes all the sense in the world. You're saying not necessarily the mortgage is a trust, but the property. What are you saying
note,
is a trust?
The note, no, the note is a trust.
So if the note is a trust.
At the closing,
then
they have to
show fiduciary authority, and that's a requirement. And they also have to show proof of claim in order to take that. So they have to show those two items. It gets back to the same thing that you would battle the IRS with. Where is your Form 56 and 4490?
But they are made trustees, John, at the closing. When you basically sign over, you are the donor, and you make them trustees of the property.
That may or may not be true, but I can't just accept that offhand. I'm going to look and think about that.
Yeah,
but
let's just say that is the truth.
Nevertheless, these mortgages have changed hands so many times. The original individual
that opened this up. Yeah, well, I'm not talking about that.
But the bottom line gets into it. Where is their fiduciary proof?
Exactly.
Where's
the
authority?
In that case, yes, of course. They have to show all the papers that they own the note.
And they're not there. They can't.
Yeah, of course not. But if they haven't given away, in any case, it could save people if it's the first experience. It could save them a lot of problems,
mm-hmm.
And I think we should look into it and maybe show people how to, you know, give them guidance to where they can take care of that and save themselves a lot of grief with by just taking away their fiduciary authority.
Agreed. Well, I'll try to get the time to look into it. It's an interesting concept.
Yeah. And because I was thinking, I don't know, that young man, is he in bankruptcy? Is that the story? The previous Gerard, the one before?
I don't know all the particulars. I mean, yeah, he was making payments. He had an agreement, and then they closed it down on him. So then they forced him into bankruptcy. You know, in order to make the payments, that was what I understood is that was part of the bankruptcy agreement. And he said he was in the middle of doing that, and they called the loan in for whatever. You know, they got a lot of nasty methods of closing things down when they're ready, you know. So they turned the tables on him somehow. But he said he was making payments when they shut him down, and I think that was after his bankruptcy. So who knows what they did. They're always doing some kind of nasty stuff to get you into something. You know, I mean, God forbid you go in for a restructuring. I mean, I've heard horror stories about restructuring.
It's called a scam.
Absolutely, that's what they use to take over your property.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Listen, something funny. I was at the post office on Saturday, and I went in to pick up my mail, and there were two guys there. One with a camera and one with a microphone. And he said,
"Hello." I think you cut her off.
Yeah, what happened to that?
I don't know. I didn't touch anything.
I accidentally did something. I really apologize.
Oh.
Okay, maybe someone could find Maud and unmute her because I wanted her to finish up.
Yeah, I do apologize for that, John.
Don't let it happen again.
That was the climax, man.
No, I'm sorry.
You guys with a camera and a microphone.
I found it how to actually use this thing, and I did not realize that I found out how to work the Q&A and everything, so I'll have to show everybody. So I do apologize. Let's see if Maud is...
Yeah, see if we can't find her. Maud, hit your star six to get back up on the mic. We'll see if we can find you that way. I see Oregon Steve is next. Hit star six, come back onto the queue. We'll pull you up.
I think you still have me on.
I think she just 631. There she is. Let me unmute her. Go ahead, Maud. You're back up.
Okay. Take it away from the post office. Go ahead.
So there are a couple of local guys that are filming, for the community. And he says to me, we'd like to ask you some questions about banks. And, I said, you found the right person. Then they asked me about my local bank, so I had to be nice. But then I went into all the fraud, and I said, people's houses, I mean, I just let them have it. I don't know if they're going to put it on the blog or not.
Boy, that was like prophetic having you there under the mic. My goodness. Hey, you don't know. Maybe you said the right thing to the right person, it'll get around. You know, that God works in strange ways.
For sure, and I did accuse immigrant of doing all the fraudulent stuff. So, you know, there's to be continued. I'm going to try and get into New York and see if they filed those papers, all your papers, you know. I'm trying to get a hold of Mr. Hoosies. Okay, I'll let you go. I'm sure there are other people that have things to ask or say.
Okay, thank you, Maud. It's always good to hear from you.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Goodbye, gentlemen. Good night, everybody.
See you later, Maud.
Okay, next questioner, you're up.
Hey, John. How you doing?
Good. Who's that, Steve?
Yep, it's me.
Oregon.
Robert's counterpart. How you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment about the mortgage thing. There's a guy that we all know. He's very brilliant in this, and he knows how they're doing the scam on the mortgage situation. So if you want to go to Ken Dost, KENDOST, on Facebook, he can tell you all about it. And he's very fast in how he's going to tell you about it, but you might have to tell him to slow down. But he knows exactly how they're doing it. and all the fraud and everything. And he'd probably love to get together with Maud and talk about the banks too, but. Are you there?
I'm sorry.
I'm here too. Okay, good. You got it, Gerard.
I said Maud's fighting a good fight. God bless her.
Yeah, we're still fighting a good fight out here in Oregon too, so.
Yeah.
Other than the mortgage stuff.
Yeah, it's about to get dicey out there, I think. And,
I know.
These guys are constantly putting their foot in mouth. I'm talking about the FBI. I'm talking about that whole business out there. They got some serious, serious problems, and there's no recovery for them. No recovery.
Even
outside of a common law court, there's no recovery for these guys.
No. And, you know, like I'm right there. My foot's right in it, so I'm ready. I'm tired of this shit. These guys are just stupid. It's just stupidity. All over the mainstream media, too, you know. It's like, what the hell are you guys doing? I mean, it's just dumb.
Well, the more they try to fix their goof-ups, the worse they make it, too.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, the worst one is when I sent that video to Robert. It's like that botched up Photoshop thing of Lavoie's gun in his pocket.
Yeah.
You guys saw that, right?
Yeah, I did.
What a joke.
I don't know, you know. And that gun came up as a stolen gun, too, right?
Right.
No, they said it was a stolen gun.
Yeah, from 2 years ago. Give me a break.
No. Who knows where the fucking gun came from? Pardon my French, but...
Well, I got a good idea. I don't have to guess too for it.
Robert, listen. The video that I sent to Robert, it shows a brand new gun. Brand new gun. It has serial number, everything on the front of it. This is what FBI sent out, right? This is their video. And then they show Lavoie's pocket, inside pocket, with, you know, a totally different gun, but not to mention the fact that it is the worst Photoshop job that you have ever seen. Obviously, you've never seen the video. You have to look at it.
I will. I've seen it. I've seen so many videos, my head's spinning.
Well, I know, but you have to look at this one from Robert, because this one is key. This is key evidence right here. It's huge.
Well, very good. I'm sure.
I'm right here at Ground Zero with Robert, and we're doing what we can. So.
Yeah. Very good. Good to know we have somebody there. Okay. Anything else?
No, that's it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, everybody. It's Brad from PA.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. It's Q&A, so I have a couple questions.
Yeah.
The group's basic thought on Mark Stevens. That's one.
Okay.
I'm not an anarchist by no means, but it's interesting how he teaches people how to tackle traffic court and, you know, basically the kangaroo court, you know, just having them show them evidence, you know, that the law applies to them. And
right.
They get stuck in that. So, and I see he gets a lot of stuff, not necessarily him, but the people that do apply his stuff get a lot of stuff dismissed without any, like, explanation, because they can't prove that jurisdiction or that the law applies to them. Because it is corporate law, UCC. And if they don't have your consent, that's the big thing with contract law. You have to have consent in order to enter into a contract with somebody. And to ask them for evidence, they don't have evidence, you know. And I was just, what is the basic, what's your guys' feelings on MarkStevens.net and Carl Lentz?
Didn't Mark Stevens used to teach on your remedy is in the law? He used to do the traffic court. Was that Mark Stevens?
I'm not sure.
Your remedies in the law has an accumulation of guys that do, you know, common law and that, and they got one guy does traffic law and another guy does a different law. I've heard of Mark Stevens. I can't comment specifically on him, you know. I know the one guy over there had an 85% or a 90% win rate.
Right.
You know, and what it is it's more like you said, it's mostly due process, really, because they can't follow the process.
Yep.
So when you file the proper paperwork, they can't answer you. And I think traffic court is probably, you know, it's fun to play around in because you can pay that $50 or $100 ticket.
Exactly.
And get out of jail free so you can practice, you know what I mean?
And
so,
I know John has said, you know, he has stuff that he's filed, you know, for future years because, you know, he's got bigger fish to fry. But it's probably a good primer, so to speak, or something that people might want to consider doing because of, you know, the fact that they can't put you in jail, you know what I mean? If you have a parking ticket or something like that, worst thing is going to happen, you're going to pay the fine. But if you can beat it, you know, at least get your feet wet, you know, and stuff of that nature, you know.
Yeah,
and
if you think you want to litigate in court and you want to go in and do that stuff, certainly traffic court is a nice place to start and get, like you said, get your feet wet and feel confident speaking to the judges and learn how to speak to the judges so that you don't, you know, don't let them hold you in contempt all the time, you know.
And so you don't get trapped in their, you know, color of law.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, they can't enter a plea for you, you know. He has you. He, when he was going into court, he had the plea, you know, I want to plead guilty to this. And he has a docket, and the court has it. But I'm here on special appearance because I have some questions. And he just says, how does this law apply to me? And what is your proof? You know what I mean?
Yeah, you see, look, it's very hard to stand there in front of the judge and argue if you're not really good, because
right,
these guys are wordsmith experts. But I forget who it was that.
But he showed the process by just doing that, okay? And he says, I have jurisdiction because this is my court or whatever, you know what I mean? They go through and they actually kind of catch 22 themselves in three areas, where you can have the judge removed, you can get the case thrown out, or automatically, you know, you move for the dismissal based on prejudice because, you know, the judge is not impartial. He's not looking out for you because that is his job, believe it or not. And what was the third thing? They have no evidence that the law applies to you. What is the evidence? You know, we make the law. We are the people.
Look, I was telling people to go to, I can't remember the guy's name, but he had what he called get out of jail free card. And his methodology was he would not plead in front of the judge. What he would do is there was three different things. And the last thing was is that he wants him to postpone it or until he seeks counsel. And that always got him postponing without pleading, you know, because you don't want to plead. That's the whole idea.
Right.
And they'll trick you into pleading any way they can, you know. So what you say is, I want time to seek counsel. They'll always let you go for that. They love that. You're going to give the lawyer some business. And then what you do is you leave the court, and now you put it in paper. And you can't get held in contempt in paper. I don't think so. You know what I mean? I mean, you have to be pretty bad to be held in contempt. As a matter of fact, if he's going to hold you in contempt in paper, it's got to be something that he tells you to do, and then you don't do it. He can't hold it on one paper, you know what I mean?
Right.
So you write it, and you put it in that way, and that's the way you get around that business of, you know, having to plead, you know?
And there's another catch-22 that actually gets you into their jurisdiction. By you appearing in pro se,
right,
you're actually supposed to appear in another forum. It's not pro se. There's two different things there. And if you're not in that right one, you're entering into their jurisdiction.
Yeah, pro se is their term. I think some people say sui juris. I don't know. But
in your own person.
Say that again, John.
In personam. In personam.
Okay. In your own person. Okay.
And what about Carl Lentz? What's
I think that's who I was telling you about. Carl Lentz is the one that has the get out of jail free card. He's got like four videos, and on traffic court they're excellent. Yeah. You know, he does a lot of UCC stuff and that we don't want to get involved in. But I'll tell you what, his traffic court thing was pretty good. A lot of people have been using it, you know. Right. And, you know, traffic court is a joke. If everybody just said innocent and I want a trial, you could close them down in a month. They wouldn't be able to handle it. They hand out so many tickets.
That is. Thanks, Greg. Yeah, I can't say it.
I'm sorry, I missed. What did he say?
Aeternitas privatus? I believe that's what he said.
Oh, yeah, aeternitas privatus. In other words, you're a private attorney.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Private attorney general, I don't know.
And another thing with the UCC, Carl Miller talks about it in the civil course, the civics course. When you make the signatures, when you're doing it, you sign it UD 208-1. They changed that.
And yes, they did.
Talk about that. He talks about it in the civic course. You've got to actually look and make sure that stuff is still there because they'll move it around. And then you'll actually be signing something and it doesn't pertain to what you're trying to do and you might get yourself caught back up in there again. It's actually UCC 308-1 now. So,
I'll tell you what. You don't want to sign a plea agreement like that because they'll come back and pick you up and throw you back in jail because it means that you really didn't sign it. That's happened. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
In other words, they signed it and they put that all rights reserved or UCC, whatever they put in there, and when they realized what they put there, they went and picked them back up and said, guess what? You violated it because what you're saying is I'm not held by this agreement.
Yeah, you didn't sign it. Exactly. Yep. Or in boxes. If you
right. So, I mean, look, you got to know what you're doing or you could open up a can of worms is my point.
But that's what the point that I'm making here that I'm noticing is it's all contract law that basically that they have turned the system on its head by working under, you know, the United States of America in like a shadow contract, you know what I mean? We've signed so many contracts and given up so many rights without even realizing them. You know, we need to kind of unmess ourselves here. That way.
Well, it's actually worse than just contract. If it was just contract law, we could just stick with contract law. That would be fine. But they're not. They've corporatized the government. They're not even who they say they are.
Corporatized the government.
Right.
So actually, if you're a U.S. citizen, you're actually a citizen of that 10-mile square of Washington, D.C. And
yes.
You have three delegates there when you vote there this year for Trump, people. All you United States citizens, Washington, D.C. has three delegates in the primary election this year. So it doesn't matter if there's 50,000 or 50 million or 300 million, it's three delegates. So that's another way that they are.
Excuse me, Gerard. We got other people in the queue with
them,
don't we?
Yeah, it's getting late, too. So let's move on. I don't want to get lost on traffic law here.
God bless.
Okay, take it easy. You've been unmuted. I don't know. Let's see. Is it 4979?
Crystal Mack.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead. Is this Crystal? Crystal Mack?
Yes. Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Okay. My phone. Can I put you on the speaker because my cord is a little shaky?
I don't know. You're getting a lot of scratchiness there, like a bad connection.
I'm going to put you on speaker, okay?
Well, try it. We'll see if it's worse or better. It's nice and quiet now, but I don't hear you.
I think she went away.
Yeah, I think so. We're not hearing you, Crystal. Or actually, her whole thing is gone, isn't it? Yeah, I don't even see her up there anymore. You'll have to try to get back in the queue, Crystal. I don't know what happened to you, but you like disappeared. a lot of scratchiness, and then you were gone. All right, let me go to the next one. Try to get back in, Crystal. I'll see if I can get you. In the meantime...
Hello, Carl. We had a
speech.
Yes. Price. Had a little fun last week. Went up to Salt Lake to the courthouse and got questioned by a few marshals up there, deputies anyway, and about what I was doing there, and said we'd had a few run-ins from a few other members up there, so I kind of got myself in a little bit of a pickle. They do not have our paperwork or anything unfiled up there. They're fully aware of what the paperwork is about. I know that. The marshal was questioning me about arresting people and who's going to enforce all of our orders and that this such thing that was there was that thrown at me. And I was trying to just to be polite and answer what, you know, give as little the information as I could and from out of me. But, you know, they said that the courts are for filing court proceedings, and there, as far as they could see, there was no court proceedings there, and that if there was any court proceedings, that had to pay the fee to file that paperwork. So,
look, there's plenty of law that says that they can't charge a fee, and there's also plenty of law that says all you need is a sworn affidavit to open a prima facie case. They don't know the law. Now, you may want to, you know, when you go in there, if you have a copy of those things, maybe even something you can hand them and say, well, here, research this if that's what you think it is, because you're wrong. And then when they ask you who's going to arrest, you say, well, you are, because we're going to report it to you. And well, then you're going to have a duty to do it. And if you don't do it, then your name's going to go in there and we're going to get you for felony rescue. Of course, that might tick them off. You know what I mean? You want to be real careful when you say, we're gonna have you arrested. But just say, no, you are. We're gonna proceed under the law. And if I let you know that a crime is committed and you don't pursue it, and I have a sworn affidavit, you're going to have a problem.
Right.
Well, one of the things that makes our paperwork valid in their court, even though they don't think it follows their procedure, and it very much is in their process and procedure, but nevertheless, even if they claim that and want to rest on that, that's fine too. But the bottom line is the essence of the paperwork, what was inside the paperwork, and the purpose of the paperwork was to report a crime, and we are reporting subversion against the United States of America to a judge, which is exactly what the law says. So they have a serious problem in the fact that they buried that, and they're going to use an excuse that it didn't fit into their proper paperwork or whatever that may be. And it wouldn't fit into their paperwork because their paperwork runs according to the rules of Chancery. Ours runs according to the rules of the common law, which is the law itself. So... But, you know, again, I wouldn't want to get into an argument with these people. You want to be careful. I would say bare minimum and get out of there.
Yeah, I mean, I told them, they asked me who was going to enforce it and where's our court. I said, well, these are our courts, and these will be where the proceedings will be held, and it'll be the sheriffs and the marshals that will be enforcing the stuff. And about the grand jury, I said, well, the grand jury is to be administered by the people. And things got changed a little bit where you got control. What ended up turning up was no problems. They just said that we didn't have nothing filed because it wasn't nothing that they knew that there was there or to be filed because there wasn't a court case and court cases or courts are for court cases and there wasn't a case. That's why they weren't on.
Look at that's no different than those guys in Nuremberg that said we were just following orders. You know what I mean? When you put a paper in. Putting in subversion and they go, well, it didn't meet our standards. That's not an excuse. That's not an excuse.
The clerk that was helping me, she's done a lot of searching for the paperwork and couldn't find anything when we looked under all different sorts of names and angles and all this and that. But when the marshal came and started questioning me, the court clerk slipped out, so I wasn't able to get her name because she just completely cleared out of the room and left me standing there with two, three marshals. and all I got was the marshal's note would give me a badge number. That's all she'd give me. She would not give me, would not give me her name. Yeah, I got her, but I got her badge.
Yeah, yeah, that really doesn't matter anyway. The fact of the matter is, you went there, you write your affidavit, you file it. The responsible party is not really any of those individuals you spoke to, unless that clerk was the chief clerk, which I'm sure that she probably wasn't, or he probably wasn't. So, but that's the ones we're going to hold responsible for this is the chief clerk and the chief judge, because they're in charge.
Right. Well, I didn't know who, which court clerk I was actually speaking to, because I didn't get to ask her that. Before I could ask who I was speaking with, the marshals had a hold of me, and I was a little bit nervous, about that whole deal. But so I wasn't able to obtain nobody's name. Just I got a badge number. That's all I got for the affidavit.
Well, what the marshal is doing now is they're running interference for the clerks, trying to make you nervous, not get the clerk's name. Because they know what our game is. They know that we can take any of those clerks and add them to the case because they, look, we've been around and been doing it enough. So they think that their job is to protect the judges, and by virtue of that, the next thing is they're going to protect the clerks if they feel like they can. So part of that's probably intimidating you and getting you the heck out of there before you get that clerk's name. Because
people need to take a Prozac or something. They're all uptight about it. I've never met so many uptight people in my life. I was uptight by the time I left there, but man, the people are screwed tight.
Well, you're a constitutionalist, so you're a terrorist. So
yeah,
you're probably lucky you got out of there with your life.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, I'm gonna move on. If you don't have anything else, we got a few minutes left.
File the affidavit with the officer's number then, I guess.
Yep, that's what I would do. Yep, that's good.
Okay, well, I'll do it.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, God bless.
Thank you. You too.
Well?
Yes, you've been unmuted.
It's not a draw. Yeah, this is Pam. I saw that Karen Hudis had written that she had talked to somebody from National Liberty Alliance, and she just mentioned that they were talking about, starting to take care of things from the local level. I was just wondering if maybe you or who it was, who was the person who talked to her, and or maybe is there anything that National Liberty could share, about the conversation, and with what she's doing or whatever.
Who are you talking about? You kind of broke up in the beginning. I didn't hear.
Karen Hudis.
Yes.
Had mentioned that she had talked with somebody from National Liberty Alliance, and I was just wondering if there's anything that, that could be shared with, how the discussion went. She basically...
Yes. Yeah.
Pardon?
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. And she basically was just saying, talking about, taking the country back from the local, starting from the local level. But I don't know if there
was... Well, the only thing she said that I could take as being on the local level was to try to get out of the Federal Reserve note, because it's bankrupt, and on a local level, you can get into other money. You know what I mean? You don't have to use federal. You could use gold and silver and Bitcoin, and there's certain places that are doing that now. And she said, look, the sooner you get out of the Federal Reserve note, the sooner that system will collapse and we'll be able to put in the new system. Now, of course, there's a danger of the vacuum that happens, and you got a lot of other people standing there waiting for that vacuum to happen, all these international tribunals and crazy stuff that we have to be careful. But I'm all for using other money, because their promise to pays are like worthless. So
right,
I think
right.
What she was talking about on the local level was trying to bring in a different currency. And this is going on in lots of different communities. People using gold and silver and barter and, whatever you want to exchange for, in like and kind, people should do that. And you should, and of course services are easy to exchange, And And gold and silver are good. And you know what? You know, you're just going to have to be careful with gold and silver. You want to, you know, they've cracked down on it in some places because not all gold and silver is considered in circulation. So, you know, sometimes they'll come in, and if you're using, you know, like let's say you were using bullion or bars or something, they might have something to say about that, that that's not real money. I mean, I don't know that they would do that, but technically they can. So, you know, there's gold and silver that's minted that has actually is in circulation that they have to accept as legal tender. See, they don't, the government doesn't have to, or actually we don't even, you know, they want you to use what they call legal tender money. And part of that is the stuff that Congress has minted, those gold and silver coins that they still mint to this day. So I just mentioning that, you know, if you're going to do any kind of substantial amount of stuff in gold and silver, just make sure you're using something that is considered in circulation, because they may try to get you in trouble otherwise.
Well, as far as bartering goes, is I imagine they probably wouldn't like the bartering, but
they got nothing to say about it. Look, if you're in the IRS system and you're reporting, they want you to report bartering. But of course, that's a whole nother. But I wouldn't report bartering. I'll tell them right now, if I don't fit the definition of a taxpayer. So if you're not a taxpayer, then you don't need to report to them now, do you? And you have to know what that means, you know. And that's a whole, you know, that's a whole education right there about, you know, who's really a taxpayer. So, I mean, people are finding out now.
Right.
So basically, that's all I got from her. You know, Karen is up there so high and so intelligent and working on the big picture with the World Banks and you know, all those movers and shakers with the Vatican. And, you know, it's a wonder she's still walking around, because she's in the top, you know, right there where the demons are, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
And she's been fighting with them a long time, and I don't know. I fear for her because, you know, she's probably rocking their world. They don't want that information out there, you know.
Oh yeah, she just wrote that somebody asked her what, you know, about that, and she said, well, there are a lot of people protecting her too, because she's stopping World War III.
Well, look at, you know, she's been beat up pretty bad by the system and by people, and really. You know, as she was revealing things, I think she thought that we were going to be horrified. And when she got done, we said, yeah, we agree with all that. I think she was very surprised that we knew all that stuff. You know what I mean? As far as the conspiracy goes, you know, because you could lose a whole room full of people when you go there. And she claims that has happened to her. And I believe that happens, you know. I mean, it was like a couple of years ago. If you went somewhere and you said 9/11 is an inside job, they look at you like you got six heads. You know, you're crazy. And today you can actually start talking about it. You know.
Yeah.
So
I have to be careful what I say. Are people just lately? I was saying about where the money goes that the IRS collects. You know, that it goes to the City of London and then to the Vatican. And I learned that from Karen Hudis. And that when I say that, well, then they don't want to hear anything else she has to say, because that's bullshit.
Well, the thing is you don't need to go there, because technically, where the money, all you got to do is say the money that the IRS collects from us goes to pay the interest on the debt. It doesn't go for 1 cent of infrastructure. People think that they're building roads and hospitals with that money. They're absolutely not. They're stuffing it into their pockets because they got this debt system worked out with the interest. That we can never pay, by the way. If we had to pay that, it's a system that you get it. It's like a credit card. You make the minimum payment, you never get out of it. And that's exactly what's going on. And that income tax money doesn't go for anything. The corporate income tax just so happens to just about meet the military budget. So the personal income tax is going to the bankers. That's where it's going. It's not going into the country. It's not buying a highway. It's not doing anything for anybody. And all it's doing is lining the coffers of the elite. And that's why she says get out of that Federal Reserve note, because that's where they're getting it. So I don't want to beat this subject to death. I think everybody kind of understands that. And you have to be careful how you present it, and you gotta know who you're talking to too. You know, not everybody's ready for meat. You gotta give them milk. You know.
Right.
Yeah, so, anything else?
No, that's it. Thank you so much, George.
Okay. Thank you.
I'd like to send you something so I can ask you about a document that I had actually sent to the judges. But I'd like to ask you about it. Is there somewhere I can maybe send it to you an email?
You can. My email is Gerard, G-E-R-A-R-D. And it's at nationallibertyalliance.org. And I got a mailbox there.
Okay, just Gerard, G-E-R-A-R-D.
Yeah, A-R-D.
At nationallibertyalliance.org.
Yep. .org. Yeah.
.org. Okay, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Okay, have a good night.
Well, thank you. You too.
Yep.
Good night.
Good night.
5 minutes to go.
Hello.
Next. Yes.
Yeah, this is Mike Rump from Colorado. I finally have these documents downloaded and filled up. I didn't email them to the nationalliberty.org to you. I emailed them to Nancy. She's here from Colorado, and she's with us, the National Liberty Alliance. Is anybody going to be there tomorrow so I can, she can forward them to you and so you can review and see if they're acceptable, and I'll go to step 8 hard copies with a donation or an X amount of dollars and forward them to you.
Yeah, you have to send them into what the instructions say. I think it goes to Linda, but whoever it says there, I don't know if she's got them going to somebody else. And then what they'll do is they'll review them and make sure that everything is in order as far as your the form and the affidavit. So she'll definitely get them, you know what I mean? But I don't know when she'll review them or
yeah, but bear in mind, you know, we're pretty much at a standstill. We're going to, maybe in the next week, we're going to try to catch up on all the cases that we've started and get out the contempts of court and all that stuff and prepare for the potential indictments that should be coming down soon. But before we do that, of course, there are other things we have to do to prepare for that move. But I think that move is very close. But we haven't been taking on any new cases because we've been putting all our time into sheriffs and problems across the nation, particularly in Oregon, and also focusing in for support on the governor out there in Nevada and the legislature out there in Nevada. And so that's kind of where we're putting our time. So we haven't been able to really focus much on these other cases. You know, right now, I don't know if you can hear the machine in the background, but the machine's been running day and night for days now. And we've got numerous machines here pressing DVD data disks and running off papers. And all this stuff is going, being prepared to go out to the sheriffs. And that is going to hopefully happen. Tomorrow's Tuesday, Wednesday or Thursday at the latest point. I think Thursday might be more reasonable at this point to say that that's when the mail is going to finally go out. And therefore, the sheriffs will be getting them. All the sheriffs should have them by next Monday. And then we'll have a little more free time to catch up on older cases. And I don't know when we're going to get back to the newer cases, but that doesn't mean people shouldn't be putting them in. I did talk with National. And we are putting together a group. We've kind of perfected this process, and we don't want to stop it. So they're putting together a couple of people who are going to take on what I was doing, and that would free me, and then it would allow that process to go forward. And if we can get a couple of people doing this, then we can get a lot of cases moving out a lot quicker and then move towards that point. But we are coming to the point soon of indictment and enforcement, but of course those two are married together. We have to be reasonable about what we're going to do and when we're going to do it. But I think that time is extremely, extremely close. But we'll see. Time, of course, will tell us.
Okay. Yeah, you're telling me this case of mine, you're not going to accept it. Is that what it is?
No, not at all. No, we're still accepting cases. They haven't been moved on. But I think I will try to – we got during this week. I think by the end of the week, I think we'll have a couple of people who will take on what I was doing. Because, again, the cases – the type of case has already been perfected. You know, this kind of case we do this, that kind of case we do that, and the other kind of case we do the other thing. And Linda prepares all the paperwork according to the plan that we've put together. And but as far as the mailing out and preparing of the papers, I have been doing that. And that's a job that someone can be taught. And so we're working on finding a couple of people to handle that part of the process. So once we get that, which potentially could be this week, I'm not going to say it is going to be, potentially could be this week.
Yeah, but
if that
happens,
then the cases will start moving again, and we'll take everything and play catch-up.
Is anybody looking at, like, he just got all his papers together and he did his affidavit. Is anybody looking at the paperwork as it comes in to make sure the affidavit's done right, maybe send it back if it's not, or
yeah,
we're not even
Linda,
doing that?
Linda is still doing that and putting things into the queue, so to speak, and it sits in the queue till we go to process.
Well,
and
if Linda's
maybe,
doing it,
maybe
it's not going to get
week,
done
maybe
very
next
fair.
Week, process may be kicked back up again. You know,
right.
That's a good possibility.
Okay. Gotcha.
Linda's out of the country momentarily, correct?
Correct.
Okay, she won't be there, so... when will she be back? Do you have any
idea?
Well,
no, she's still taking on things. She's been unavailable, but no, she's still doing things. And,
I would, email it to her. Don't not email it.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, because I need approval.
Well,
to,
I'm not sure correct. What the process is. Whatever it says on the paperwork,
that's
what you want to do.
That's what the 9 steps say, approval, and then send 2 hard copies and X amount of dollars to you folks over there.
Right, but yeah, the $60 which we've set up covers the cost of all the mailing and stuff, and we may have to raise that a little bit, but in any event, right now that's what it is. But no one should send that money in until we move it into process, and then Linda will tell you we're moving it into process and we're going to do your case, and that's when it would happen. But until then, you know, we don't want people sending money.
I don't mind sending the money. I have 2 other cases here. Gerard knows more about it. There's a huge amount of money into it, and it flies through the National Liberty.org. I would donate a great amount of it. Gerard knows about it.
Right. Well, look. If people want to donate, then that's great. We do things for people without asking for money or requiring anything. We don't want to connect a dollar to it, except for hardcore costs like mailing and paper and toner. And so that's the only thing we require. But if people want to donate more than that, that's fine. We'll of course accept that.
Okay. Okay. I wanna have Nancy. Email it to you, and I'll wait for Linda's respond approval to send hard copies and whatever needs
right.
to be complete.
Yeah, Linda's
okay.
probably on the call right now listening in, so she'll keep a heads up on that. Now, what we're going to do, and Linda, who's listening probably at the moment, or if she's not, she'll probably listen to this later, but I think not this Tuesday, not tomorrow, next Tuesday we're going to reopen back up talking with people and meeting with them on Tuesday. Goodness, what time were we doing that at? I don't remember. We'll
number,
figure that out.
What number will that be next Tuesday?
Well, it'll come into the same room. And I think we're doing that at 3 o'clock, if I recall, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, which
right.
is what I would
okay.
prefer because, the evenings are tough, and I try to take a little break here or there, and,
okay.
and then I try to get to bed
okay.
early if I can lately, but, you know. That's
yeah, okay, because this case is kind of an emergency status.
Yeah. Okay. All right, we'll
okay,
see how it goes through that process, and we'll see where we can take it.
Okay. I thank you folks very much, and God bless.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Yeah, Linda just informed me it's 3 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday, so not tomorrow Tuesday. I'm way too busy to get into this call on tomorrow. But I will be freed enough next Tuesday to be able to restart those calls and meet with people to discuss the cases, where we're at, what we're doing. And I think by then we're going to have at least one person, maybe more, that will be filling my position on doing that paperwork. And then it'll just be opened up in full bore again. And as fast as they could do the paperwork, we'll get it out. We will take it as far as contempt of court with opportunity to amend. That's as far as we've been taking any of the cases. We haven't taken any cases further than that unless they've done something a little different. Like at the Hammonds case, we're going to do something special there because something else happened out there. And we'll talk about that maybe next Monday. But, you know, we're going to get moving on these things, but we can only go to the contempt of court with opportunity to amend. Now, again, like I said, this possibility of enforcement may come soon. You know, it's looking very strong that things are starting to happen across the entire nation. And if it goes the way we hope, then, yeah, we will be doing massive amounts of contempt indictments. Well, we probably wouldn't do massive at the beginning. It would be just so many individuals. And then if people straighten up, of course, then there'd be no need to go any further than that because we always got the olive branch out there. But when they continue to do what they do at some point in time, it will become a massive situation.
Right.
So, but anyway, we should move on. Matter of fact, we're 5 minutes past, so that's our last call. We'll be back next Monday, Lord willing, and don't forget we have the leadership meeting on Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Everyone should come and see how it is that you can assist us in the leadership program, take on whatever positions and leadership you can, or just help out a little here or there, whatever it takes, because we got to get things going. But again, with that, we'll see you next Monday. Good night.
Good night, everybody.